Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
We want to talk about the idea of a psychological contract. Obviously, you have a basic contract. Well, not obviously. You should have a contract, hopefully, in place that is legally proper in your place of work, wherever it is that you are working. But, you know, there is one element of your relationship between yourself and your bosses that can be regulated, and that is the formal part of your employment contract. But there's also certain expectations that we have, ought to have, definitely, maybe you've never thought about it before, in terms of an unwritten contract, which has to do with the psychosocial space in which you are working. Psychologically, is the workplace a place where you can go to and perform as well as you are expected to perform in your formal contract? What does that look like? So I want you to call throughout, share with me your experiences of the world of work. How do you feel? Do you feel psychologically at ease, secure? Is it an alienating environment? Is it a difficult environment? Have you been able to raise with your bosses if you are unhappy about the space that you're in psychologically? What will make it a happier place for you? A place where you can be more productive and actually live up to your key performance indicators. I want us to focus on the psychological elements of being at work. We spend so many hours at work. I think it's quite frankly surprising we don't talk more about what it will take to make the world of work a more optimal space to be in for so many hours of the day. Okay, so the lines will be open throughout on 011-883-0702 in Jersey and in Cape Town on 021-446-0567. And our guest for this segment is a senior lecturer in organizational behavior and people management at UCT Graduate School of Business, Dr. Linda Ronnie is with us on the line. Good morning, Linda. How are you?
Yeah, well, thank you, UCVS.
So now let's play one of our clips because we asked some folks to give us a sense of their experiences.
Hi, I'm a 30-year-old journalist, and I think what is important to me in a workspace is feeling appreciated in terms of being given opportunity for personal growth, as well as salary. I mean, we need to survive. I do have ambitions of buying a house for myself, as well as maybe possibly building a house for my mother, so I need financial stability. And also, just know that as a black woman, your space is aware of blackness, is black conscience, and doesn't try and sugarcoat issues of race, particularly in the field where I work and where we are out there to expose things. But I don't want to be in a space where I'm feeling like the space where I work is afraid to expose what is happening within itself. So just honesty in terms of issues like that. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, that's fascinating, isn't it? Because once we start talking about values, organizations, Linda, have organizational values. They sometimes have these huge things as you walk into the foyer area telling you what their values are. But yeah, I think, Linda, we're coming to the crux of the South African problem in corporate in particular. Because those hidden values, and as you are saying, you're just sparking a million and one thoughts for me. It's the same when we are teaching at universities and you are lecturing. There's a curriculum, and then there's, of course, a hidden curriculum. And with the workplace, it's the same. There are the espoused values, and then there's the organizational culture that is in the attitudes, the norms, and all the other things are a little bit more not tangible. And if you are, as that first insert said, if that woman is a black woman with a particular lived experience and she comes into the NetBank or the RMB environment in the middle of Sandton, her life and her set of psychological experiences and her background is not what the founding fathers of that organization had in mind when they built an organizational culture. You know, and this is what makes it difficult, Linda, and here's the way I want us to talk bluntly. You know, it's very important for folks at all levels in the organogram to acknowledge their agency and to speak up, like you say. But there come costs, right? There's cost to that. You don't want to be known as, you CBS, the one who's always putting up his hand at the town hall meeting and, you know, talking. Or be Mohau, the one who's always writing the emails for everyone else to see on the email list that is unhappy with the quality of the desk or the chairs or the coffee. Because then people start thinking, okay, that one is a troubled one. So it's very difficult when you are already suffering imposter syndrome in the workplace to also be brave enough and to utter the psychological grievances that everyone else has. So how do we negotiate that? Because let's be blunt, the South African corporate space is a very male space, a very white space, a very white male heteronormative space. And in that environment, if you don't fit that particular template, truth be told, however uncomfortable it is for ears listening to us, then it becomes harder and harder the more your own identity is away from that dominant identity to be the one to be talking about psychological contracts and other fancy demands.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, just to add on to that, 2 points. One, back to the trust issue, because for me, trust is the bedrock of the state of the psychological contract.
Yeah.
Thinking about our past, which sometimes I think is our current reality, really. Trust is not at an all-time high in South African organizations, and that's no surprise because trust is not out there in the social space.
Mm.
So, you know, organizations aren't sort of living in limbo.
That's true.
So that for me is a key point. The other really is around how do you go about creating this enabling environment? Do you know, how do you go about doing it in such a way that brings people in without almost pathologizing them? Do you know, I'm kind of thinking about programs where they say, well, this is our program for our black employees, and this is a program for our women employees. So instead of integration, there's something that's kind of running on the side that makes people, well, first of all, there's not a kind of a common organizational culture then, or an organizational feeling, if you want to
yes.
use that term. But you're also creating divisions between people.
Mm.
So it's quite, do you know, it's quite a...
But it's also weird, isn't it, Linda? Because it's not like you women have a problem with being women in the workplace. Us men have a problem with you being there.
Yeah.
But you
yeah.
are the ones being shipped off to a one-day workshop off-site to somehow come to terms with your alienation.
I will say I'm so absolutely not in favor of these workshops, which tend to be ones that are kind of go if you like, you know, very voluntary basis. And you end up talking to people who are equally committed as you,
yes.
while those who need change feel like quite comfortable where they are. And in fact, there's no shift there at all.
Mm.
And may I say, actually, just thinking about employment equity practices. So we find a growth of black people being put into senior jobs, getting fantastic salaries, but still not having a voice because they don't, the power in their job has been removed.
Absolutely. And how does one deal with that?
Yeah, I mean, well, one has to say, if you've got that bond, then maybe you do want to stay there for a while and just work it on that basis.
Mm.
But most people, and I mean, I think about our students here at the business school, who are really, 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 they're really clever blacks. Okay, and I don't think any of them would take that. They wouldn't take that. Certainly not.
But this is where the basics of psychology comes in, doesn't it, as well, Linda? Because at the end of the day, we've got to be so blunt about this conversation as previously excluded people that it starts with basic Dr. Phil truths like, don't disrespect yourself. you know you're getting that title, but you don't actually get the voice, speak up. Otherwise, you are dissing yourself.
Yeah. I mean, what's amazing is this notion that somehow in our post-apartheid state world, that now, you know, the playing field has been leveled, another great myth, and that now we all have a voice. No, we have an opportunity to have a voice.
Yes.
That's very different from having a voice.
Absolutely.
Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Thursday, April 27th, 2017. So I have been told. This is our weekly broadcast, Thursday's Workplace Racism. Dial in if you have figured out some things that work well on the job to neutralize racist activity. If you're having difficulties, certainly dial in. If you are self-employed, non-white person, you're an entrepreneur, absolutely. You should be one of the first folks to dial in. Give us some of your experiences. Let us know how working for yourself, as they say, changes your contact with whites on the job. The number 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. Number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. And I'll make sure I say it at the very beginning this time around. This broadcast is not for spectators. This is not for people to tune in, whether you're listening online, if you're listening via the phone. This is not for people to tune in on a regular basis and just hang out on the phone and, wow, these black people, they have got some wacky problems. I'm glad that's not what this is for. I certainly understand this is not the most pleasant thing. It's not that fun to come before a bunch of strangers and talk about, you know, how you've been abused on the job, had to go in and fight and wrangle with some unqualified race soldier to get your correct compensation or to get help in getting someone to stop sexually molesting you on the job. These are, you know, real things that people are dealing with on a regular basis. I think it's very helpful if we can, you know, kind of share some of the things that have happened to us, because this is not something that's isolated to you. This is widespread, as you heard in the audio clip, all around the world. This is black people's experience every day, 40 hours of the week or how many ever hours you work, whatever it is. This is our experience, just being absolutely terrorized in every way you can imagine, not getting correct compensation, not having any authentic power, regardless of what title or how many zeros you have on your paycheck, pay stub. All of that, not being able to get the job in the first place, not being able to get promoted, unwanted touching on the job, incorrect. I mean, all of the things that we talk about on a regular basis, this is happening on a mass scale worldwide. So certainly dial in. I think it's helpful because, one, we get to hear some of the similarities. So I think it gives us a much better understanding of what it means to be white, how they practice racism, some of the similar things that they do worldwide. And I think it puts us in a better frame of mind so we can know some of the things to expect and can appropriately game plan for these tactics, things that we see coming up a lot. Listening to this program, you should already have a good strategy together about how to deal with unwanted touching, because we've heard that a lot. Seems like that's a widespread thing. Right on. In that vein, just quickly with the opening segment, I mentioned Cape Salk 702 when we had our guest on the program earlier this week, just 2 days ago, also from South Africa. She had also been on Cape Talk 702, the very same program, in fact. The issue, one of the issues that we spoke about 2 days ago was the conflation when it's time to talk about racism. Somehow now everything that you heard in that feminism, LGBT issues, all of these other complaints or grievances get lumped into dialogue about racism, white supremacy, standard racist tactic. They've confused a lot of non-white people, a lot of victims, into bringing those concepts into discussions of racism. Also thought it was very important when she talked about where they talked about power, white people, that is, they are excellent at that procedure. Get a non-white person, we'll give them a big desk, big title, we can put lots of degrees behind their name, but still, they are not in charge. They've been doing that for centuries. And I would say, number one, make sure you don't lie to yourself about that. Because, I mean, hey, it can go, in my view, the title can be, you'll be the first black president of South Africa, Mr. Mandela. That's how high it can go. Now, you're not going to really be in charge of, you know, anything. This is still white power. But you'll have the title. You'll have a great office. It'll be much better than that cell that we had you caged in for the last 27 years. They can do this worldwide. Mr. Obama, great office for you, great title. Now, you won't have any, you know, power per se, but you will look great for the next 8 years. They can do that on a big level, small level. Number one, make sure you understand that yourself and that you're not lying to yourself. And then to the degree that you can, although it can be difficult, if you can make sure that other non-white people around you don't get confused about that and think that just because I got this office or this title or what have you, powerful white people put me here and they can remove me in the next 5 minutes if they choose to. And you and I should make sure that we do not get confused about or forget that. Moving forward, if you would like to email, if you have a comment, if you have a question, you can email untiljustice@gmail.com. Untiljustice@gmail.com. We can keep it anonymous if you don't want to, you know, share any pertinent details. We can read your commentary on the air live. I'll keep an eye on my email as we proceed. So feel free, drop an email. I know we do have some folks who are just not able to speak via the phone during the live broadcast. Some of the folks who already wrote in, I'll read some of their comments as we proceed. First person. I'm so excited about the racism. I'm noticing that I will number each situation. So this is a black female. Number one, my boyfriend works in an office building in the lobby. He's a fire safety director. His coworker is non-white Cuban. The maintenance workers are three white guys. The Cuban has been at his job for 10 years. He wanted to become a maintenance worker. Office management, whites, ignored his request. Instead, they hired two white guys with no experience, hired them as porters, and sent them to school to become maintenance workers. The white guys have been at the job only a year, maybe a year and a half. The management, whites, and head maintenance supervisor, white, so-called love the Cuban. So why didn't they help him upgrade himself? Great question. Number two, same office building as above. There's a homeless non-white that hangs around, I guess their building. The maintenance workers, white, they will talk to him and feed him most days, even hug him. I say, why don't they pool their money together and get him a room? This is the same maintenance supervisor who wouldn't help the Cuban get a better job, but so-called loves the homeless black guy. Number three, my job, so this is the black female, they will know an employee is aggressive, violent, and still put you to work with this person instead of correcting the situation, the person. 3A, the boss gives non-white Spanish workers the best sites. My boss is white. The receptionist is non-white Spanish. They let her look out for her own. I'm learning to not fault her, so I don't blame her. I put the fault on my boss for allowing her to mistreat the black workers. I would agree with that as well. Going back to what I said before about keeping in mind who is in charge under the system of racism, white supremacy, because sometimes they can take a black person and put them in that. I think we've had a lot of that through the years, talking about workplace racism, where they can take a black person and say, well, we'll give you the title of being supervisor or manager or whatever it is, but your primary duty is going to be, we want you to go in there and get those niggers straight. Yell at them, curse at them, be as rude and as surly as you can. Don't you dare open your mouth to a white person. But yeah, get on those niggers. If you had a hard time, they'll listen to you. Go in there and get at it. That'll be your official job for a lot of time for what they'll do to non-white people. So the important thing, as was stated in my view, keeping in mind, white people are most to blame for all of this. Next person that wrote in. Okay. This is a black male. As you might remember, I was caught off guard from a white laborer, co-worker, that wanted me to be his errand boy slave. This person wrote in last week. They were saying this is like a construction site. I think the white person said they wanted them to wipe the sweat off their brow and just made some other really crude, crass commentary. Continuing, this time I came prepared. This time the laborer said his requirements, grab a towel and wipe his sweat and fetch him some water. In front of the other supervisor and other co-workers, I patiently waited for him and the laughter to subside. I then gave them my response. I told him I also have a request. The laughter stops and mouths begun to drop. I asked him, will he be willing to do the same for other laborers that he sees in need of water and a towel? His response was, so this is a construction site. I'm feeling torn about, do I read the expletives or I'll keep it kid friendly. So his response, the white man, F no. As what I expected his answer to be, I then said in front of everyone standing there, so you're not a team player? Question. He then laughed awkwardly and turned red. That ended that encounter. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. I'm always a huge fan of asking questions. Just stay in the question lane. Stay in the question. That's one of those where he was like, boy, this nigger, I peeked. He couldn't say that, so he just walked away. Brilliant, great question. Continuing, I hear on your program, Gus, that you should not have any personal items on your desk. Darn tootin', nothing. Which is great advice to minimize contact conversation about your personal life. I don't have a desk, but what I've done was remove my wedding ring and never wear any affiliating logos. My question is that whites still ask questions, do I have a wife, children, etc. Should I answer them truthful or no? I also had a situation with the supervisor with the way I fill out my W-2. I'll let you know how that goes, but to say the least, it seems like he's trying to dominate me in the area known as labor and economics. This is from one of our different, we've had a few construction workers call in with scenarios and what have you. So with the two, that number one, like that is codification. I know some people like that is, oh man, like that could be a total brawl. I know some husbands, some wives, like taking that wedding band off, like, oh man, you might be sleeping in the garage or anything, but I can totally, I mean, that's just codification. War is being waged against us. If you think that will, you know, keep down some attention, I have seen on some jobs where if you are not married, that will cause the spike in attention, because then it'll be, you know, who can we pair you up with at the office, or does anybody know any friends or that sort of thing. So, you know, you kind of have to see, just gauge for yourself what people are talking about on the job. In terms of, do you answer truthfully if they're asking you personal questions? I think we've had a different, for this is United Independent, Counted Racism. We've had a variety of different responses to this one. I think Thomas in New York and some of our other folks who've participated have said they just make up stuff. I think Thomas in New York, if I recall correctly, he said he just tries to make up the most outlandish stories he possibly can. Like, oh my goodness, we just had the most difficult childhood ever, and 8 of my friends were shot in drive-by shootings, and they sold crack, and oh my goodness, it was just hell. That's the type of thing he'll just make that up, and the whites just eat all this up. Same thing like with the white people at work who love the homeless black person. They just eat that up. We've had some people who say that they just keep everything short. I've said before, I don't have a good memory. I'm greatly victimized, a little retarded, so it would be difficult for me to remember all of my falsehoods, right, so that I can keep my narrative going for however long I'm going to work there. So I would, just for me, I would try to keep things, say as many truthful things as possible. That way I don't have to worry about slipping up on any fabrications that I've constructed, but restricting what I'm going to share. If it gets to politics, I think Emmy has said, I don't discuss politics. But who'd you vote? I don't discuss politics on the day. Come on, man. I'll see you all for lunch. Have a great day and just keep it moving. If it's asking about family things, it's up to you if you want to say you're married or, you're with somebody or you're single, whatever it is. That's up to you. Again, I would, if you're going to go that route, I would just already have in mind how much you're going to talk about. And also, I think Roz has said, if you are starting on a job where you can just make that known that, I'm just not a real chatty person. I just don't do a whole lot of that. I'm a team player. I'm down to help out in any way I can to make this the most successful enterprise we possibly can. And I want to be the best contributing member that I can, but I just don't do a whole lot of that running off at the mouth. I'm just a real quiet, reserved person, and let's get to work. Like, if you can just let people know that that's your personality, be courteous, you speak to everybody and do all that, that I think can help minimize. But we'll ask. We'll see if other people have feedback in terms of do you answer truthfully and how invasive the questions are going in terms of, if they're asking about your childhood, where did you go to school, how long have you been married, have you been divorced before, like where do you put the boundary up, how do you do that? Folks want to share on that, feel free. The number again, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *6 if you would like to participate. I think we have at least three more workplace racism reports that people have written in. I will share those as we go. Folks who dialed in who have a hand up, line should be open. I will be nabbing folks directly. Let's see. Folks who dialed in with a hand up, line should be open. Proceed.
Greetings. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, at the beginning of you reading the reports from others, it was broken up pretty much all the way through the first one. Probably, our white enemies somewhere, kind of like tripping up your work. Just wanted to let you know that. It sounded interesting, but I couldn't really pick up some of the things that you were saying earlier in the report that the person was trying to give. To the question about on what I would give out personal information. Heck no, for one thing. I would not give out personal information. It depends. I'm not going to act like, the retired firefighter is the baddest guy around, but it depends on the environment, on whether or not I would tell the person straight up that, it's nobody's business but mine. Or I would be a more mellower in the answer by just stating something that I just wouldn't like to give out because I'm here to work and I've had problems with that in the past, something like that. It depends on the person who is asking me all of this and the general environment on which way I would go with that. Because some people, in my experience of being around white people in the workplace, they kind of set you up. They'll talk loudly about their private lives. because they know that they have a lot of us in a Stockholm syndrome type of mental status, and we would, you know, follow our masters and in that way, and then think it's all right, and then they're giving us an uncalled invitation to speak openly out. Ourselves when we get our turn, you know, that sort of thing, and we'll just lay it all out, and then that a lot of time that stuff will come back on that non-white black person. I've seen it happen, that'll come back on that non-white black person, that information, because white people, as we all know, are very vicious about when they store information and how they can make a weapon out of it against non-white people. And the workplace is one of those well-known places of many sad stories, a lot of damage. People, as far as even psychologically, you know, from that standpoint, on how they can harm a non-white person in the workplace with that private information that non-white person gave out, thinking that it was only just to carry on a conversation, you know, and then I say to myself, as if that white person is going to solve that problem for you, you know, that sort of thing. So that's basically what I have to say on that. And some later time around, I'll probably give out something myself as far as workplace. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am, we can hear you.
Hello, this is a caller from Ohio. I had called in on the Defense Story call-in, and I had briefly said something about me speaking about my coworker. He's a non-white male, and I was asking him questions because my previous supervisor just died suddenly. So I typically work out of office, and so I'm able to, I don't necessarily have to deal with a bunch of different personalities and suspected races. So I had asked him when I had to go in for a meeting, and they did like this whole memorial for the supervisor. There was food donated, and, you know, they were just wanting us to, or not wanting us, but they were, you know, saying nice things about him. And in the previous meeting, they were talking about how much of a unit we are, like a family and everything. And I just found like the whole thing odd. I worked with the company for a few years. The black male who I asked the question, is this type of thing typical? Is it weird? Have they ever done this for any other person? Because the supervisor, of course, was a white man. He was like, no, and he said, you know, at first I didn't catch what he said, but he had said that, you know, well, he has a couple of shades on the other people who have, you know, passed suddenly or passed away during the course of their employment at the job. So I had, I finally was like, I was taking that whole thing in. And another thing that they had did, which I found very odd, was the fact that they were wanting us to, like, fill out or, like, say something nice about him or some type of memory that we had of him, and they would then pass all those memories on to his family, because apparently that was, you know, helping them get through this traumatic thing. Like I've said in previous call-ins, like, I was not a fan of this man at all, to say the least. So I would delete these requests. Like, if I would get an email, I just delete it and go about my way. Like, they're also like taking donations in. I'm not going to, you know, part with my few nickels that I have to further help him and his white family. So I would delete those. At this meeting, I guess it wasn't enough for the people who already responded through email. They also put cards in front of us to write down, you know, these nice memories. So I kind of felt like, you know, it was almost like an unspoken thing of, you really should I'm not even sure how to say it, you know, commemorate this man or whatever. So I still didn't write down anything, and I just kind of slipped the blank card in with the other ones that were left on the table. But I definitely felt really weird about the whole situation. Like, and it just really, since I've been trying to learn more, and of course I'm still learning, it seems like it's becoming easier for me to see the racism, white supremacy all around me. Another thing that I wanted to quickly say is that they, of course, end up replacing him with a younger white male who had this, you know, he had said that they just went ahead and asked him, so they didn't even put out the position for other people to apply. They just went ahead and just asked him to do it. And he also was wanting to start to ask me personal questions and wanted to talk about his family life and all this other stuff. And so one tip that I have is that I'm like the host, I just definitely keep it truthful and short. So if they ask what hobbies I have, I watch TV. But what's your favorite channel? I don't really have one. Just something very, very basic, and I try to keep it as professional and as short as possible to kind of give off this vibe that I'm only here to just do this job. That's all I had to share this week. Thank you for listening.
Appreciate that. I'm not sure what the issue is. It looks like if you're attempting to listen to the program online, it might not be working. I'm looking on my broadcaster. The stream is connected. My audio levels are moving. When everyone speaks, myself, everyone else, so we're connected. It's going out, but it is not playing. I was going to verify that my voice could be heard and wasn't breaking up or anything, but I was not able to hear the stream, even though I'm looking right at the broadcaster and picking my voice up as I'm speaking right now, says we've been broadcasting for over a half hour. I have no idea what the issue is. I'm going to speak with Mr. Reed. This is a new one for Gus T, where it's showing that we're connected. It's picking up the audio, but for whatever reason, it's not, the stream is not playing on the websites, TuneIn, any of the other sites where you can listen to the content live. So I'll see if we can get that addressed. In the meantime, other folks who dialed in, I guess number one, if you want to tweet or share the broadcast and let people know that they need to dial in, I'll Facebook and tweet that. If you want to hear the content or participate, you'll have to dial in until we get the issue corrected. But for the folks that are with us on the phone, if you have other commentary you would like to share, feel free to the female caller who just shared from Ohio. Good job. I know that white people can be kind of rude, and they can pressure you in those situations, like, come on, such and such was great, and he worked with us, he was a great, any of those type of situations. If somebody you worked with, if they died, or if they have a child, or if they're getting married, or anything, birthday. I've even seen, I think, Chantel, she shared before, that on her job, it was a white person was leaving, I think, and I think they might have even been an intern. It's not like this was someone who had worked there for 20 years or, you know, helped establish the firm. This person had worked there for a real short period of time. They were going to school or leaving or whatever they were going to do. And they said, oh, we need to pitch in and get like some $200 gift. And they needed everybody to pitch in like $20 or something. And they were getting like aggressive about it. Like, come on, you know, Jackie has been great and she pitched in so much. Come on, you got $20. Like, what? And I wouldn't have a whole lot to say either. I wouldn't get upset about it. Just, no, I just don't have the funds to participate. But thank you for asking. What or however you want to phrase it. But it would be very, very short that I'm not participating. Keep it moving. Other folks who had a hand up, if you had commentary that you wanted to share, line should be open. Feel free.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Greetings, everybody. This is Amit. I wanted to provide some feedback. I think that there are a couple ways that a person can go about what they reveal or don't reveal in their work situation or work environment. So I agree that it's United Independent and it's going to be whatever really works for you. For instance, I've done a couple of things. Like, I guess I'm simultaneously lying, but while kind of being true. Now that I'm in school, nobody actually knows that I've been in school before or how old I am or what I studied. And that's intentional because my degree is in AFAM, so I really don't want, you know, all that's going to come with that. So they'll ask me questions. Like one time I accidentally slipped and had said something like, man, it's totally different now. And the professor looked at me and was like, you've been in class before? And I was like, I just lied. I don't even remember exactly what I said, but I got out of it and I lied so that she thinks that this is my first time. She continues to think that and doesn't begin probing and asking all these questions. So it's like I simultaneously lie, but while still being kind of truthful, because I think I'm a little bit more like us. Like if I made up a bunch of lies, it would be difficult for me to remember them. But if you know that that's something that you want to do, like for the gentleman who is saying that he would rather not wear his ring, if you're going to do that, I would totally have kind of like Dan Freeman. What's his name, Dan? Mr. Freeman? I think it might have been Dan, but Freeman. I know his name is Freeman from The Spooky Set by the Door. Like have an entire alias and have that kind of written out. Like, I don't think that there's anything crazy about that. If you're saying, well, this is who I'm going to go by. Like, I've even considered it. I'm going to make myself this age. This is what I've been doing for the amount of time, blah, 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 so that I can not, so all that I actually am can remain hidden and protected and safe. And people don't begin to link anything and begin to somehow find me. But making an entire alias, you go by your name, I've been doing this, this is what I do, I'm not married. You could, like, go ahead and have all of those things that you are anticipating those questions answered. That way you're not stumbling if you're going to do that. And then if you choose to wear your ring and be married, then go ahead and have the same thing for being married. So if people say, oh, man, so you're married, go ahead and have a response. If they start asking questions, go ahead and have a codified response for their questions. That way you can have it be where you're being truthful but hidden at the same time. Those are some things that I think that I've implemented that have worked and some things that I plan to develop further. Because right now I don't have to do that much talking about like myself, but I will soon. And so I'll need to figure that out. And I've been giving it some thought. Like, I'm not going to change my name. I'm going to be myself. But make it up some fake truth or half truths, if that makes any sense. But I think that's like a great question. And I'll just share that being kind of that level of strategic, I think is very codified, powerful, and good, in short. Just giving it a lot of thought before you actually go into the environment can be helpful, proper planning. And I'll chime in later if people have questions and all that kind of stuff. Thank you.
Appreciate that, Emmy. Yeah, I think that's great, too. I think we talked about that with some of the people who, like, if you work in those job situations where they, like, demand that you talk and you got to tell us what you did for Christmas and where you're going for your summer vacation and what your children did in school the past month, like all of that stuff, like to already kind of set out in advance if you think you are going to make up some things or what have you, to already have that in advance so you know what your narrative is going to be or if you're going to be truthful, like you already know in advance how much you are going to say and specific things that you would be willing to talk about that are as vague as possible. I think we've even given some examples. And if people, this is one I think we've had some people that said that they would like to experiment so they can get practice. This is one where if you want to have some of us, myself, or some of the other people who call into the cows, they can be the white people that are asking these questions. You know, hey, Miss Johnson, what did you do for your weekend? You know, how are your children? Are you married? How long have you lived in this part of Wisconsin? You know, just to ask those type of nosy questions where they're just probing, trying to get, you know, as much detail as they can about their Negroes. And if you want to practice, you know, the way you would respond to these type of questions, how you deflect, how you evade that sort of thing, that's something I think even we might have some listeners who'd be down to participate so you can get some practice. But just think about all that in advance so you know how you want to respond. Other folks who dialed in that we have not heard from, we did have someone who wrote in. It's a lengthy response. I think I can kind of paraphrase it so people can get the gist of the problem that he's dealing with on the job. But I do want to make sure I share that because he was asking for suggestions from listeners on how to deal with the situation. Other folks that we've not heard from, if you have a hand up, line should be open.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Awesome. This is Kent Steele, and I am currently in Orange County. I wanted to kind of piggyback on the discussion that has been taking place regarding identity at the workplace. I know several other victims of racism that I've worked with throughout the years that have been successful at taking on workplace personas. On the clock, they will be referred to by a completely different name than they are off the clock. And I think that this is a really good way to compartmentalize the people that you're involved with in your life. I myself go by a different variant of my name when I'm on the clock. This is for a number of different reasons. There's so many different benefits, including, you know, just being able to have a better control over your image and your presence in a digital sense. You could have a workplace persona that is just appropriate for your resume. That way, when people are doing visual checks on it, if they're, you know, going over resumes, yours doesn't get passed over. And if anybody should Google you, for instance, you can just have your workplace persona present. For instance, I know a guy who's named Alonzo, and, you know, we call him Alonzo, those of us who are associated with him outside of the workplace, but when he's in the workplace, he goes by Al. And, you know, he's conveyed to me that this, similar to myself, allows him to know, how do I treat somebody who I'm dealing with? If somebody's, you know, calling, in his sense, if somebody's calling him Al, he knows not to be too familiar with that person. He knows, you know, not to regard that person as somebody that he should not get terribly close with. So I totally recommend, if you, especially if you do have a name that may be difficult for native English speakers to pronounce, or that might be distinctly what they call ethnic or whatever, I totally encourage to just take advantage of the relative plasticity that's associated with one's identity. There are just a number of different advantages, and it just allows you to move more effectively in different circles that you're involved in. And I know that a lot of people's identity are closely tied to their names, and I'm not saying to, you know, kind of put aside your ethnic identity or your familial identity or any sort of identity that you may hold dear to you. But, you know, at times of war, you might want to adopt a nom de guerre. So I totally recommend exploring that option for oneself.
Very interesting. That certainly could be a thought, that that there can be like a whole like mindset that goes with that name that you take on, so that that's, you know, this is my codified persona. I know I'm on the job, so there are things I do not talk about when I am operating under this persona. And, you know, this is just how I carry myself. Like, that could be a good way in terms of just how you want to frame your thinking, behavior, emotions for whatever, how many ever hours per day you have to function in that environment. And I particularly like that if you all ever end up being out in public, just what they're calling you by, you already know how you're going to be relating to that person, how you'll be functioning with them, things that you talk about, things that you don't talk about. Could be very, very helpful for victims of racism. Just so that I can get this one out early and make sure that we have time for feedback, because this person was specifically asking for ideas, suggestions on how to deal with this problem. It's longer, so I'm going to try to think synthesize this. I don't know. I think I can read the whole thing. I'm going to try and read this. He has the letter that he wrote in to management, the whites on his job, and then he just kind of has the synopsis. I'll read the synopsis, and I think that should suffice. And then folks can give their suggestions. So this is a black male. So this is an incident that happened on Sunday, April 9th, in which I was addressed in writing via printing the Word document and signing and dating it and leaving it with the HR manager, department manager, and sales supervisor manager mailbox on April 10th. I work in women's shoes, commission sales, retail environment. Only the sale staff make commissions, but we don't depend on an expediter, hourly staff, whom we depend on to retrieve the shoes we request. But we depend on, these staff to go get the shoes that they need. The main conflict was me being told what I was told was available was not there, and me going there to find it actually was there and selling it to a customer, only to be told by the expediter lead what I did was wrong and against the company's policies and procedures. So I guess they have like a storeroom area. So the people that are out on the sales floor, if a person says, okay, I want this particular shoe, I guess they look on the computer, inventory says whether or not it's there. They have additional staff that go get the shoe and bring it to the sales rep. I guess in this case, he looked on the computer. She was not inventoried in the computer. He went to check to see if there was some human error, and it turned out that there had been, because they did have the shoe available, even though it was not listed in the computer. And he was told that this was incorrect, that he should not have done that, gone to look for the shoe. I avoided conflict and sent a written request to the highest member of management to clarify if what I did was wrong. And to this day, April 26th, I have not gotten an answer. I need your help and advice on what I should do next. My company policy and procedure says I can submit a in-store solution claim online, in which they are forced to handle my claim in a fast manner based on guidelines. Yet on April 15th, my department manager asked me if anyone from HR called me up to speak to me. I told her no. She told me it was odd and said they haven't had a chance to get to this case. She told me not to be surprised if they called me up the following week. They never did, and the situation remains unresolved. Should I continue to work and service the clients by entering the stock room, double-checking the expediter's human errors when I'm told I'm wrong and breaking company policy and nobody will give me documentation that I am incorrect? Or should I submit an in-store solution claim, which potentially may put me on high alert with the HR manager, my manager, in which I think they could profile me to find a reason to fire me if I ever broke any other company policy?
So he had to attach his file.
So this is a situation, he said this happened on April 9th, and that I guess he wrote this on April 26th, and since then the situation hasn't been resolved. He hasn't sent an email update, so I assume that they still have not responded. This is one of those why I say it's very good to know policy and procedure before an incident happens, and then you can just do a quick refresher about what the rules are. Now, if this is in policy and procedure, which he said the supervisor or whomever told him that it was, then we should just be able to solve this quickly. We can go to the page. This is what the policy is. Boom, boom, boom. Now, if it's not there, now we just want to know if this is a rule, even though it's not in policy and procedure, because sometimes whites, they will trick you. They'll say that this is an unwritten rule, right? This is something, it's not actually written down, but we all observe this policy. I've ran into that one a few times as well. So even if it's not in policy and procedure, okay, we just want to know what is the policy and how should we proceed from this point forward to make sure we don't have any issues, no problems. Everybody can move forward great. We can sell these shoes and make as much money as possible. That's all I would want moving forward. Do you want to submit the claim? I don't know what would be the issue, because you're not indicting anyone per se. I don't think you're trying to get the person who told you not to go back there. It's not like you're saying that this person is a racist or this person, you know, whatever, should be fired. You just want clarification. Is this in the policy and procedure? And if so, we can just, you know, get our highlighter out really quick, go to the page and be done with all this. And if it's not, we just want to know how to proceed from this point forward. So, and particularly in this situation, since you have already been accused of committing a violation. So, it, I mean, in my view, that's the sort of thing, if that's what we're trying to avoid, them focusing on you or something to get you fired, in my view, that's already happened because you've been accused of doing something that you're not supposed to do. So I would just want that resolved, not, you know, nobody needs to come in and apologize or anything like that. I'm not calling anybody names or accusing anyone. I just want to make sure that I know what the policy is. So at least as I understand it, I read the statement that he wrote to the manager. I might be leaning towards doing the in-store solution and just making it that you just want accurate information as we proceed. We all come here to do a great job, to make money, to sell these shoes and other merchandise. I just want to make sure that I know what the policy is so that I'm in compliance. That shouldn't be asking too much, and they should be able to let you know. Other folks have suggestions, thoughts on how to proceed with this? Would you do the in-store solution claim, which they're supposed to expedite? This is like a fast-track way of addressing problems. Would you do that, even though he has concerns that this might set him up for retaliation down the road? Or would you just ignore it? It's been 2 weeks. Nobody else has said anything. I don't think he's been given any sort of discipline, right? They haven't taken any punitive actions in the time since all this happened. Would you just say, forget it, let it go, and, you know, try to move forward as best we can? What do you think?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
I believe that an effective way of moving forward at this point is, if it's been 2 weeks, you can just proceed with the behavior that you've been doing, because if you can't find any sort of explanation that it's wrong or that your behavior is against policy, you can't find a specific policy that it violates, and that this has not been addressed or escalated by management, and that you have a record of asking, you know, if this is a company policy or if this is one of those quote unquote unwritten rules, then you are fine. If they want to fire you, they're going to fire you, and they're going to find a reason to do that. But these sort of little things, you've done an excellent job of getting the proper documentation and the proper asking the proper questions to. If they wanted to escalate this, you could point to this paper trail or this digital trail that you have left in the form of these emails. Also consider that if you are working for a branch of a larger corporation, that there are human resources people that are above the human resources people that are on your site. So if there are any sort of questions that aren't being resolved after you've followed up with your request for a resolution maybe twice or three times spaced out over the course of these next couple of weeks, then you can go ahead and say, hey, is this an issue or not? Or what is the official rules on that? But if it's lingered on for that long and hasn't been explicitly dealt with by the people on site, then I would just proceed with the behavior until there's documented steps to change this behavior on their part.
Okay. So we got one for just continue doing what you're doing. You've already done the work establishing a paper trail, and that'll help protect you if they do make this an issue moving forward, but just continue doing what you're doing. Incidentally, it's called an in-store solutions claim. This process, that's the official type name for this, this process involves human resources, employees, members that are outside of the specific branch, kind of what you were talking about. It involves them in the process of figuring out what the issue is, and then they come to some sort of resolution about how to handle all of this. So that's the in-store solutions process that he was asking about, whether to do this or just keep doing his work. Any other folks have suggestions on how they would handle this? Do you do the formal report the in-store solutions claim, where you try to get other folks to step in and get an answer to the question about the policy, or do you just let it go and continue doing your work?
Can I be heard?
Oh, that was Stacy in the UK with us as well, staying up late once again. You want to proceed, then we can get Radiant Emmy next.
Okay, yeah, I mean, I was just going to say, sorry, hello to all the other callers. I mean, I don't completely understand some of the policies and the in-store solution, but I think if there's an anxiety there about, you know, getting others involved at this stage, I would just make sure that you've got documentation, as been said, that demonstrates that you've asked questions and that you are querying a decision or getting a steer on how your manager wants you to proceed. And so long as you're not doing anything which is going to cause you, you know, problems in terms of your breaching company procedure, and you know that for definite, then I would just make sure that you've got a clear audit trail of a decision from your manager. You know, obviously, if you are comfortable about involving HR, yes, they will. It has the potential to cause retribution, but it also might also just be a way of actually stopping manager from proceeding in undermining you at a future point as well. You know, everybody has checks and balances. But yeah, I would just make sure that you've got a clear audit trail around what you've been asked to do and the process that you're following. That way you've got something as backup in the future. But that's all I had to say on that one.
Awesome. Always grand to hear from Stacy in the UK. Emmy, did you have suggestions, comments on this one? Do you make a report or do you just forget it and keep working?
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
I kind of think I would make a report. And I would make a report because I'd be curious to know if the person who is accusing him of doing something wrong, why are they doing that then? Outside of just practicing racism, like, do they have, like, what was the purpose of not giving that person the shoes? Like, I need to know a little bit more before I would just kind of let that go, because then I'm letting it, like, you could totally let it go. But then does that person, that's not going to erase that person feeling some type of way about you. So is this personal? Is this person like trying to already get you fired and this was like a first step? What's up? Like, what's going on with that person who wanted to make it seem like he stepped out of line by going to check for shoes? I ask people to check for shoes all the time when I want shoes. I want to see you walk and go look for the shoe. So what's so wrong about that person, him having looked for the shoe? So because I don't have any of that information, I would want it all the way resolved. And I feel like if he does follow it through, because it seems like that person might already have something against him anyway. So letting it go is not going to make that person all of a sudden stop feeling that way towards him. But if you follow it through, it's kind of your actions speak for your character, saying that, look, I'm here to do a job. I want to follow it by the book. I want to be by the policy and procedure. I want to make sure I'm doing things right. I don't want no drama. I just want to come here, make my money, but I want to make sure that I am doing the right thing. I don't want to have any confusion. Do I look for shoes? Do I not look for shoes? I need this thing resolved, and then everyone will know that you are about your business. They won't like you, but they'll know that you are legit, square. Like, you're not just, you know, doing whatever. And that will kind of, I think, act, I don't know if it'll be a protective measure or make you more of a target, but it could work in your favor. It could not work in your favor. I see it being an okay, good thing, more on the good side of the spectrum, just because of the things that I mentioned before. Because you still, if you just let it go, I mean, you've been showing up to work. But then also, let me say this before I forget. If you do follow it through, you're going to have to make sure that you are indeed legit, showing up to work on time, doing the right things, being professional, all that kind of stuff, you know, that way you're not trying to hold somebody else to a standard that you're not holding yourself to, because then they'll look at you and start more drama. So I think I would just follow it through. And then
just be definitely vigilant about and reading people's nonverbals as well to figure out what's up with this person who is feeling offended because I went and looked for shoes. I hope that makes sense, and I hope it's helpful.
Right on. Anybody else have, I guess, suggestions, recommendations? Do we just keep working, say forget it, it's been 2 weeks and they still haven't responded? Or do you go ahead and submit the formal report, the in-store solutions claim, where you want you just want information? That's what this is. We're just trying to get information on what the policy is, so everybody will know what it is moving forward. Anybody else? Got everybody? Right on. That's what I said earlier. It's United Independent. You kind of have to come to your own conclusions sometimes about how you're going to proceed in these situations. Everybody's situation is going to be a little bit different. Your circumstances certainly are going to be a little bit different in terms of how important the job is to you, how long you've been there, other factors that will mitigate, you know, how everything plays out in your situation. So just think about it. Sit down. Do some thinking. You can call in. Do some talking. Talk to other people, friends that you have in your life, and then come to the best decision that you can. And then, as I've said, too, update us. Let us know. You know, this is what I decided. I listened to what you all had to say. I listened to myself. I thought about it. This is what I decided, and this is how it worked out. That's always appreciated because that lets us know where we can make improvements, where we can refine our counter-racist techniques for on the job. But yeah, for this situation, again, I think I would be leaning towards the go ahead and do the claim because, as I stated before, there is no accusation against anyone per se. I don't think doing this would result in someone else other than the black male submitting the claim being fired or reprimanded. I don't think. I think this would just be one for clarifying policy. And at least for me, for black people, even if it's not on the job, I am not one for taking accusations mildly, any type of accusation. Like, you didn't put the toilet paper back on the rug. Whoa. Wait a minute. Is that true? Like, let's evaluate really quick. And particularly not for workplace situations, because I've just seen where these things can pile up, where it can be just some careless accusation today, and then 5, you know, months later or whatever it is, you get 6 of those accusations and it seems like it's nothing. And then, boom, we're sitting down in my performance review and now I got 6 accusations that I violated policy there and there. And, you know, I thought it was no big deal. And now it's, you know, this is why you can't get that promotion. This is why you can't get that raise. This is why you can't, you know, get the big corner office. You're going to have to stay down there on the corner. So that's just the way, based on my experiences, what I've seen. I'm not one. I do not ever recommend, you know, taking any sort of accusations mildly, especially if you know this is a false accusation. And in this case, we don't know if it's false or not because we can't get clarification about the policy and procedure. And that's another one. Just me, I think policy and procedure is very important. There should never be a time on the job where there is uncertainty, confusion about policy and procedure, particularly policy and procedure that I am being held to and even accused of violating. No, that is not cool. This needs to be resolved. If it can be resolved without the claim being filed, great. But I would want that cleared up henceforth forevermore. Is this policy yes or no? And even if it's not written, is this what's expected to us? Just now forward, don't go in looking for anything. Even if you think they messed up and didn't put it in the computer, don't you go back there looking for it. Fine. That's what I'll do. And we can move forward and never have this problem again. Context of white supremacy's workplace racism. The number again, 641-715-3640. And the code is 564-943-pound. Press *6 if you would like to participate. Since we have a healthy amount of spectators today, I hope that all of you are doing phenomenal. Either you're self-employed or racists on your job are not bothering you at all. I hope you're getting phenomenal paychecks, millions of rand, dollars, whatever. What is it? Pounds, whatever it is you happen to be in the world. I hope you are getting an astronomical salary, maybe even making more than what you should make for a change. And then you can invest. The blog racism-notes.blogspot.com. racism-notes.blogspot.com. Listener supported counter racist radio. PayPal button is in the top right corner. If you're not into PayPal, drop us an email. Since you don't have problems on the job, you can drop us an email for a physical mailing address, and you can donate a few nickels since your workplace experience is going so well for you now. And I will take this moment before I check in with Stacey in the UK if you have an update or something you want to share. If things are going well for you on the job, if you find yourself in that fortunate position, fabulous, great. That does not mean that you should not be observing and even keeping a workplace journal, because I'm sure things are still happening in your environment. Even if it's great for you, there are still things taking place, probably racism being practiced even on your nice cushy job. Two, it does not mean that things will be great for you forever. This gravy train might come to an end at some point. So I would be squirreling away money, not spending recklessly. That's something Mr. Fuller talks about quite a bit. Just because things are great now doesn't say it'll be great for 2018. So save that money. That doesn't mean go out and try and get a really lavish lifestyle. And then if whites begin to make trouble for you later, you don't make the same amount of money that you used to. So now you got a whole lot of other problems in economics. So just something to keep in mind. If things are going tremendous, great. But racists, they tend to be pretty reliably terroristic. So probably won't be great for ever. Stacey in the UK, did you have commentary you wanted to share?
Hi, guys. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I've got two updates. I'm going to try and be concise. Please bear with me. So I think a couple of weeks ago I did talk about a young man in my team who claimed I was shouting at him, and that was brought to me by his line manager. And that was really following me asking him to do a task which he informed me he doesn't do anymore because he is being developed, and you know, that just being an ongoing situation. I think I mentioned that it had been raised with me by his line manager originally, and I had said that he either lodges his complaint or not, as the case may be. And then eventually it was raised with me by my head of team before she went on holiday, and I'd asked her to again ask him to either make it formal or retract it in writing. So I was informed this week by my line manager that he is not going to be making a formal complaint. But in the interim between the first time it had been raised with me and then by my line manager, four different managers had raised the issue with me in some way, shape or form, because they were trying to be slick in between and move away from a formal complaint or accusation that he'd made, when they realised that I wasn't actually just going to sit back and accept that what he said was gospel, or to be treated as if what he did said was gospel without some kind of investigation, in inverted commas. So I'd written up the notes from a meeting with my line manager and my head of team, which was quite detailed. And, you know, I mean, it just highlighted the ridiculousness and the blatant racism that was taking place. And so because they were clearly anxious, I knew there was one thing that I'd written in the notes from the meeting, which related to his line manager. And I just knew, because I just know how they behave, I knew that we're going to seize on something that she'd said, or the fact that I'd mentioned her. And the simple reason, because she is a black female, I'm a black female, And the rest of the managers concerned are white females. So it's easier to try and play two black people off in the office. And by putting her out front, make it look as if we're not really practicing racism. The problem is with me. So, as I said, I was informed that he will not be making a formal complaint. But my manager then told me in the same meeting that his manager, this black female, has concerns about the way in which I handled the original complaint. That's not a complaint. And she has some other concerns about how his performance has been managed, etc., etc. And therefore, they would like to arrange a meeting with the three of us. So that's this black female, myself, and my line manager to discuss it. So my manager doesn't have any concerns. My former line manager doesn't have any concerns or is not raising them. My head of team doesn't have any concerns. It's just this black manager that has concerns. So I just, I must admit, I kind of half laughed because it was just so ridiculous. I said, okay, well, let's do that. And just to let you know, I am going to be formalizing this. And she said, oh, really? Well, you know, we do want to, you know, just try and handle these things, you know, at team level. So I said, okay, well, we can have this discussion. I have no issues with his line manager. And I am interested in what she's got to say. But I'm also going to be making this formal. And she said, oh, can you give me a steer on what your... We're not using the word complaint. But effectively, it was what your complaint is going to be. So I said, well, you'll see. And that was the end of that meeting. I did have a discussion with my head of team today about a related matter, but you know, basically the attacks are coming from many, many different directions, and so this whole issue was brought up again today, and again, you know, they're trying to pull me away from formalizing a grievance, but I'm gonna do it. I mean, I was hoping that they would take some of the heavy lifting off my hands by making their complaints formal, but they're not going to do that. But at the same time, you know, what I did say to my head of team today was, do you think that I'm going to sit and have 4, 5, 6, 7 different complaints that are not complaints made about me, and I'm not going to have some kind of response? And she's like, oh, of course you should. Yeah. So I just left it at that. So that's my first one. I appreciate I've been talking for a while. So I do have a follow-up on the finance matter, but I'm happy to come back to that at a later point in the programme, Gus. And I'm interested in any comments on what's gone on, actually.
My comment would be, let me echo what I said about those accusations. I've seen it in my life, and now we have it from a global perspective. I've seen it. That's why I said I'm not one for taking any sort of accusations, particularly on the job, lightly. Like, all of that is taken very seriously. And in my view, that sends a message. The same way when we talked about unwanted touching on the job, when you do not nip that in the bud immediately, like the very first time or as soon as you take the job, you start asking questions about sexual harassment to send that signal up. If you don't do that, it just gets worse and worse and worse. And I've seen that be the same way with those accusations when white people are like, oh, we can just blame anything on them. Just, you know, anything happens here, we'll just say that they did it. Whereas, oh, well, wait a minute, I have some questions. In fact, let's have an inquiry to see if that's true. It's been my experience that white people become much more hesitant to just start throwing out accusations or just saying anything to you, about you, in reference to you, if they note that you are going to take that seriously. It's not just going to be you coming to curse and yell and all that, but you're going to be serious, you're going to be professional, you're going to ask questions, and you're going to be persistent about getting to the truth of the matter. They will be much, much more hesitant to come. That's been my experience. Not that they're not going to terrorize you, but they'll be a little bit more hesitant to do that sort of thing. Just my experience. Anybody else have questions for Stacey in the UK, what she just shared? Right on. She did say she had another incident. We'll nab that as we go as well. Is anyone that we missed totally, who has a hand up that we have not heard from at all?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Greetings to you, the host, the caller, and the listeners, the callers and listeners. I wanted to give workplace racism doing real estate, a real estate broker. And today I had a showing, and we went to the southern part of this particular city that I'm in. And we went to the house, and but before we got out of the car, we noticed the house right across the street had a life-size ape from the movie Planet of the Apes. It was a life-size ape, like in a walking stance, like it was kind of walking. And then there was a smaller statue of a white guy holding, a white person holding a lancer. I forgot, it's supposed to be a, that was a racist thing. I forgot the what it was called, but that was actually a black man who had frozen to death. So it was just like blatant racism, those two statues. And my buyer was just telling me, you know, that she felt that that it was just, it was, she just felt too, it was too racist in that area, and that, you know, with the people displaying their, I guess, belief systems, that she just didn't feel comfortable, and she also felt that there was just tension just all in that area. And then I looked at a couple of the other houses around there. Just, it's like a little cul-de-sac, and I looked at a few of the other houses. There's a few symbols that I recognize from being in different cities that would, you know, tell you that, you know, perhaps they're racist. But that was just one example. And then just in another thing that happened was a little earlier with another buyer that I had that we had closed on. After the closing, which was recent, after that closing, I had spoken to the loan officer, and we were just talking about, you know, different neighborhoods, and she was telling me just about the South End. If you go far south enough in this city, you'll start seeing Confederate flags, and I was just explaining to her, and we were just talking to each other, you know, like, we're not supposed to steer people, but, you know, I don't know, it's just really difficult operating in this field, because there's laws that are basically supposed to, like the fair housing laws, and there's laws that are supposed to stop discrimination against black people. But then when black people are, you know, when we're worried about our safety, like if I'm worried about the safety of my buyer, I feel I'm not supposed to discriminate. And then there's all these other laws that were written to help us. So it ends up hurting us. It doesn't even make sense. And I have to say that, you know, working in this system is not going to solve the problem as far as working the jobs in the system. We have to do it to eat, but ultimately we have to figure out a way to get independent of white people. Thank you.
Appreciate that. We've had a number of folks who have functioned in real estate where they've said, have all these laws where they've had fair housing laws, no less, but they have all these rules and regulations that are supposed to stop black people from being victimized by racists. And that is not, I mean, not that that should be surprising, but that is not the case at all. Even you can even look at the number of people that are engaged in real estate, particularly when you start looking at the people that are really making lots of money. The same trends tend to happen where it starts to be very, very white. I think same thing that they said in South Africa. And I think even a number of folks who have been involved in this industry have said that they have got the distinct impression that white people were deliberately trying to keep black people out of doing well in this profession. Not that they don't do that in, you know, other areas of employment. Other people, are there any folks that we missed completely or get the broadcast where everybody is just doing wonderful on their job and waiting for their day to retire so they can go out and chill on their yacht since they've had so many years of wonderful success on their job. Any folks we missed completely? Cannot wait to get a job like you all where I have no issues on the job. Let's see, the folks who had shared but did not get to share their personal situation. I think Emmy was there. I know we have Stacy who has another comment as well. Did you all have additional comments you wanted to share also?
Hi, Gus.
Yes, ma'am.
Should I go? Or?
Feel free.
Okay. So, last...
Uh-oh. Are you still there? Are you still with us, Stacey?
Hi, Gus. Oh, sorry. Okay.
We can hear you
sorry,
now.
Sorry, I muted myself by mistake. So last week, I did mention again that my line manager had asked me to request that a vendor submit an invoice for work that they had not completed. And that was basically a breach of company procedures. So I met with a informally with our old accountant, department accountant, just to check my facts. And I'd also obviously read the policy. And I, you know, I understand how that procedure works anyway. But I just wanted to check that nothing had changed. So I did send her an email last week saying I'm uncomfortable with what's been proposed. I've checked the policy. I don't think we should be requesting this invoice. If you can point me in the direction of another policy, please let me know. So she came back with a response, which was very misleading or economical because it related to the process for paying invoices as opposed to the underlying issue of this vendor has not done the work, we shouldn't be paying him. So I had made sure, because it was said verbally, anyway, that request, the original request, I wanted to make sure there was also an audit trail on that original request. So I emailed her back and I said, sorry, just to clarify, because one of the things she'd said in the email was that she'd asked me to request the invoice. When the invoice comes in, request that the vendor clearly states that they're going to do the work in this financial year, which we're not allowed to do, but I won't go into the detail of that again. So I emailed her back and I made clear that is not the conversation that we had. And I asked, just to be clear, you are now asking me to request an invoice for work that has not been completed and that the vendor will be doing that work in this financial year. So she, again, responded with a non-answer or avoiding the actual question, the underlying issue. So anyway, so I emailed her back and made clear, this is the conversation we had. This is the reason why we shouldn't be asking this person to do any further work. And there are other considerations and it wouldn't be value for money for a start. Either way, even if we need that vendor to do more work, we shouldn't be paying them up front. It will be on an ad hoc basis should any technical issues arise. So she emailed me back a couple of days ago and said, thank you. That was literally the response. Thank you. So I know that thank you is, yeah, basically, yeah, you've caught me. You shouldn't be requesting it, but she's not going to admit it out and out. So I had a meeting with the auditor again, just to clarify that position. And we both agreed that we should send another email just clarifying that invoice won't be raised. So I've done that this evening. But one thing that he did do, because he's not my official auditor, I was deliberate in not going to the actual team accountant because I just wanted to get some advice before I escalated it. But when I did read the company procedure again, technically any hint of a breach I should be escalating. So I did ask him today and he said in fact he had gone and spoke to his chief auditor informally just to keep an eye on it. And he basically said if she does pressure you again, then you'll have to raise it formally. But for now just keep it as is. So that's my update on being asked to basically commit some kind of fraud. I'll mute my line, Gus.
The tackiness abounds worldwide. Outstanding. I remember her sharing about that before. And again, that's, you know, as I shared when she was talking about this issue previously, we've had people in the States call in with the exact same thing, where a white person came and tried to get a black employee suggested, encouraged, and requested that they do something that was in clear violation of company policy and seemed like out and out fraud, where they, the black person, wasn't even going to get any of the money, where this, all this fraudulent money was going to another white person, where they were looking out for their friend or whatever they were doing. But any of that stuff, again, policy and procedure. Just stick to the policy and procedure. If it's something that you think is incorrect, I think I'm going to have to check on this. I'm not sure if this is something that I'm authorized to do. I'll double check and get right back with you. No problem. Shouldn't be any issue with that at all. No one should have a problem with an employee making sure we're in compliance. Great job. Great way to handle it. And I did want to say one other thing before I check in with some of the newer folks that called in. With the earlier incident where you got falsely accused of, you know, being mean to this white man on the job, where this has now switched to where it's a black female manager, coworker of yours, who's, I guess, raising concerns that, you know, she wants to hash how you, your conduct in all of this. And I'm just reiterating what you said, because I just think it's important worldwide. Again, just to emphasize, Stacy is calling us. It is 2:30 in the morning. She is reporting from the other side of the globe, and white people are doing the exact same thing. Somehow, some way, it ends up being one black person and another black person. We have an issue. We have a problem. And this started with a white man falsely accusing Stacy of being rude or nasty to him. And now, at this point, he's not even making a formal complaint, but we have two black people have to sit here and flesh out conduct, behavior, concerns. They are excellent at that sort of thing. And again, it's, in my view, is so, so important, because they do that so that we just get upset at the black person and we have some sort of nasty vendetta for the next 15 years while we work here, trying to spill coffee on each other and throwing stuff off each other's desk and that sort of thing. And white people can just sit back and have fun, because we're just niggers to both of them. They don't like either one of us. Any other folks that we missed, folks that we have not heard from at all, who have a hand up, line should be open.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. I didn't call in last week, I don't think, but I had some interesting events that occurred in the past couple of days. And it seems to be, I think, centered around the same area with the same individuals in my area, like, because these things didn't necessarily happen to me, but they happened to some coworkers. The first was, there's a black female who, I guess she has been, I guess, going through a lot. She has four male children, and, you know, she's been trying to keep up with them, and, you know, and I think she's doing you know, a lot at her church, and, you know, she's been having some health issues as well, and, you know, she's been having a hard time, I guess, staying awake at her desk, so I guess the supervisor has, I guess, seen her, you know, I guess, like, nodding off or going to sleep at the desk or whatever, and, you know, the person, I guess, since, you know, I know you are talking about titles, you know, given to black people that aren't really significant, you know, like supervisor, assistant supervisor. And I guess she's supposed to, you know, somewhat dictate to everybody in that area, you know, what to do and what, you know, what to correct and what to work on. So she told this is a black female, told the other black female to try and do better on not trying to go to sleep or whatever. But the lady was saying that if she took the medicine that prevents this, it would cause all type of bad, I guess, side effects. So I guess she was doing this for a period of time. And she was telling me that the other white woman that worked in there, she was coming in there smelling like cannabis. And I didn't necessarily really smell it that much because, you know, I'm always on the go. But yeah, that's what she was, I guess you could say, alleging or whatnot. And there was a time while I was training this other person, you know, for how to do my job when I'm on vacation, and the same black female was crying or whatnot. And it looked like she was writing something down in a what appeared to be a calendar book, like document. So she said, you know, I'm just writing down some things, and I'm writing down every time that the white person come in smelling like, you know, I guess marijuana or whatever. You know, I'm not laughing at the victim, but just the white person smelling like the cannabis. And I guess she said she was called in the office about it. But I'm saying this to lay out the context of this white person that was smelling like the weed. She made some very interesting comments. The first was she, like, I was helping this customer at my desk, and she kind of kneeled over because I guess, you know, the coworkers, like all of them, well, for the most part, most of us will snack at our desks or whatnot. You know, it's permitted. You know, nobody really gets in trouble for it. She looked over and she said, man, you, like, for, you know, for one, she said for the first time, she said she's like an animal over there chewing, you know, eating her food or whatever. And I don't think she responded that time. And then a couple of days ago, she used the term horse, you know, H-O-R-S-E. Said, you know, you're like a horse over there, because I guess the customer was just looking over there to see who that was chewing. And then the black female says, you know, what was that again? And, you know, she said, yeah, you're like a horse over there chewing. So in my view, like, I thought that was very, very discourteous and very toxic, you know, the tone in which she said it, you know. So I went home that day thinking about it, and ironically, the white woman, she mentioned to me that our black assistant supervisor in that area approached her and said that the person who this comment was made to, I guess, said that it hurt her feelings or whatnot. And, you know, she was telling me this before the other black people got there. So she was saying that the person recommended that she apologize. And, you know, and I thought about what Mr. Fuller says about never ask for an apology. So, you know, it didn't seem like she wanted to apologize. And, you know, I wanted to say this because she said, yeah, you know, I didn't mean to insult her, nothing like that. You know, I was just telling her about how she was eating. And now she said, you know, and then going into metaphors and comparisons, she said, you know, if I wanted to insult her, I would have called her a cow, not a horse. So now I didn't say nothing after that, you know, I just let her talk. All right. So now I found that very interesting. You use another animal to make it seem like, you know, her calling her a horse would be any less insulting or whatnot. So yeah. And one last part to this was, you know, she didn't apologize apparently, because the black female asked me, hey, did you hear what she had called? I said, I did hear it. So I guess, you know, they had their own conversations about it. And apparently she went today to, I guess, switch, I guess, because they cover each other on the headsets to do the operator. And, you know, the black female that was insulted, she had a customer, and it was a black male. So this white woman came up to her and said, oh, well, you know, it's your turn to do the headset, you know, the operator job. And, you know, she was already with the customer. And the white woman looks at the guy and says, oh, I didn't know he was an actual customer. So, you know, I was like, wow, man, you know, that's two times already. You know, what I suspect she was trying to tell me is she thinks this woman was practicing racism. And this person is young too, like maybe like 23 years old. So, you know, that was just some of the most recent events going on in my area. And that's all I have for now. Thank you.
I was cracking up laughing. The black female, I guess, on your job who's tracking this white woman in the days that she comes in smelling like cannabis. That is hilarious. I don't know if she's listening to the cows, if that's her workplace journal. She's tracking the activity of whites on her job. But that's exactly the type of thing that I talk about, like just making note of that sort of thing, because you never know when someone might, you know, try and accuse a black person saying, yeah, somebody is coming in regularly and they smell like cannabis, and it might end up being you, you know, saying, well, I think it's you. And then you could just go back in your records and say, well, I've been documenting for a while. And I've noted that Peggy has a certain aroma on a regular basis. I don't know, you know, when she's consuming, but there certainly seems to be something pungent in the air when she enters the room. And then some of the other comments, same white person who comes in smelling like cannabis, making all these comments about the other, this black person in the office, saying, comparing them to an animal. I think that's something that we've talked about on the program a lot, when white people compare us anything, comparing us to a horse or whatever it is, that this is done all the time because they just don't view us as humans. So any form of mistreatment is supposed to be acceptable and doled out to black people at all times. Wow. Let's see. Other folks have any commentary they would like to share relevant to workplace racism? If you have a hand up, feel free. Line should be open if you're listening in. Hopefully we do not have spectators. The number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. And thanks to the folks who gave us a sound check. They said that they could hear fine on TuneIn, and they were listening online, said they were getting crystal clear reception. So thanks for the folks who gave us a sound check. Some of the other folks who wrote in, this is a black female. Actually, she had multiple things. The black female who wrote in the first time, I think retired firefighter, said he was not able to hear some of her commentary, where she was talking about her own situation. And then she talked about her boyfriend's situation, where the white people, they did not promote the non-white Cuban person on the job, even though they claimed to like him so much. And then she was talking about her own situation, where white people have a non-white, non-black person in a position where they get to be rude and nasty to other black people. And she was saying, just make sure, remember who's in charge. Racist man, racist woman, racist child. She had a final observation she wanted to add. She said, I knew it was wrong, but didn't see this as an act of racism at the time. I just thought it was, quote unquote, unfair. And this is something that I've encouraged, too, that we should all be reflecting on our workplace experiences, our work history, because I'm sure there are a lot of things that happen to us, especially folks. If you got a job and you were working when you were a teen, maybe some of us have done that, or, you know, even when you were in your early 20s, what have you, where I'm sure you didn't have a great understanding of racism. I'm certain if you go back and think about some of those experiences, some things will stand out. She continues. She says, when I was working for a fast food restaurant, the white managers decided in order to pull tourists from off the street, they asked a non-white black female to dress up as the store mascot. The non-white female was a new hire and of medium to light complexion. They wanted her to wear the Wendy's outfit and put a fake red pigtail wig, red makeup on her cheeks to look like a clown. The non-white female refused, black self-respect, right on. Mind you, she was a child, 16 or 17 years old. She was fired, or better yet, she quit. The white managers turned around and asked a dark-skinned, non-white black female to wear the Wendy's costume, and she did. Afterwards, the white manager gave her $50 out of his pocket. I think often on jobs, white people, they like to do things just to embarrass and humiliate black people. And even this is beyond job. This is just the type of thing that white people love doing all the time. Any excuse, any reason where we can humiliate and just make black people look like buffoons before the whole world. Yes, go out, go dress up like a clown and stand outside so that everyone can see you in front of the establishment. Yes, that will make my day. I'll pay $50, $500 for that sort of thing. That's racist man, racist woman all day long. And again, appreciate black self-respect. And I appreciate she included in the message about not bashing or blaming the victim. We're all victims of racism, white supremacy. And, you know, just hope, I think Dr. Welsing would talk about that. Hopefully we can all try to help nourish black self-respect so that, you know, hey, even if they come with, you know, a dump truck full of money, if it's going to be something that is demeaning and just to humiliate me and black people in general, no thanks. Keep it moving. Hopefully that we can get that much black self-respect that all of us can make that decision and not feel bad about it and not take a whole lot of time to do it either. Other folks that we've missed, do you have commentary you want to share?
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
I apologize. I was unable to comment a little earlier for a couple of the people who shared, but I can now. And my primary thing that I wanted to, I guess, ask and kind of say, Ms. Stacy, they said that this white male is not going to file a formal complaint. So my first question, because I know this has been like a long time coming, this whole thing, and it wasn't like you just mentioned it last week. So I'm forgetting some of the finer details. But if he didn't file a formal complaint, why do you even know about it? Like, who brought it up and what was supposed to happen is my question. And then the thing that I kind of still want, I still want it in writing. I mean, I know, like, who cares what I want, but I'm saying, for me, it doesn't feel like enough to just say, okay, well, he decided not to file a formal complaint. Unless that is written in an email where I can have that in writing where this person said they're not going to file that complaint, I feel like it's still something that in the same way that he went and ran his mouth or did whatever he did to say that he was about to, I think there has, and now you had to deal with this thing for weeks. Like, this has been a long time. For him to turn around and be like, well, I'm just not going to file a complaint or a formal report or whatever it is, and you're just supposed to let it go. Like, no, I think we need that in writing, because that was a whole lot of stress, and you don't need it to come back up later in the future. I don't know what all is in writing, so if that's in writing, then cool. But if not, is it possible to request that in writing from this person? I'm not 100% sure. I don't know, you know, what levels and how things go over there, but is it possible to request that still in writing? Even like, just, I just need it so I can feel good. He's not going to bring this up later. This is not something that's going to, you know, follow me or become something. Okay, that was my question.
No, that's really helpful. And to be honest with you, I'd spoken to my union rep about it. And she's saying, well, clearly they're not going to put it in writing because they avoid putting an awful lot in writing. But what I've made sure I've done and what I will be doing is writing the minutes of every single meeting that I've had with my managers, warts and all, including documenting that he now apparently no longer wants to make a formal complaint. But what I've done and what I intend to do is make my complaint formal regardless. And so whether he doesn't want to make a complaint, the fact is I now have just cause to make a formal complaint about all the accusations that he's been making that are unsubstantiated, and the way that my managers have treated me for all these non-substantiated accusations that they keep avoiding trying to use the word complaint. I'm calling them concerns, and I keep saying we seem to be playing with words here, especially if I'm getting pulled into meetings to discuss complaints, that are concerns, that are not concerns. And that basically anybody can just come in and raise all kinds of accusations and I'm just supposed to receive this. And if we're, you know, if we have an open environment, then everybody should be willing to get feedback, including my formal feedback. So I'm not surprised that he didn't respond in writing. They're obviously trying to protect him. And why they have brought this black female into the equation is because they're trying to shift the emphasis from the blatant racism. I have zero intention of getting into conflict with this female. I do think I think there is either a cowgirl involved or she is just both extremely white identified and just confused. she doesn't have all of the background to this because she has taken over responsibility for his land management quite recently. So she may well feel that there are things that are concerning her. They're not based in fact, and I'm not even going to get into a lot of discussion with her on the matter. I will just sit in that meeting and take detailed notes and thank her for her feedback. So yeah, they're avoiding putting anything in writing, but that doesn't stop me from doing it, and that's exactly what I intend to do. But thank you for your feedback.
Grand. We had other folks wrote in. This person said, it's a little lengthy. See if we can get through this. Work journal. This work journal is my attempt as a victim of racism, white supremacy, to examine my interactions with coworkers, my environment, and not to be judgmental, but to pay attention to the behavior, words, actions in my workplace. Also, pay attention to my behavior, words, actions, and my responses. The goal is to become better codified, learn as much as I can in regards to my job, get all my promotions, and avoid conflicts. Co-worker's profile will consist of co-worker's name, race, gender, and work title. Journal observations will be based on interactions with co-workers, also my code strategy in dealing with that individual. Example 1. Name, white, female, supervisor, located off-site. Based on prior conversations, especially my first evaluation with her, she constantly mentioned how quiet I am and I should get out of my cube more and socialize. No negative evaluations in regards to my work. Since she is off-site and the comments she made about me being quiet is the same comments my coworkers have said to me, I can tell they have spoken about me to her. You should expect that that is happening on your job. Any non-white person listening to this program anywhere in the world. Other than those comments, she was professional and answered all the questions I had about the job and getting training. Code strategy: keep it strictly professional and about work with supervisor, and do not discuss any work that I am involved in with the supervisor with other coworkers. My coworkers do gossip a lot and have no problem discussing any personal or work-related information they have about anyone and everyone. I do not want any comments I may make to be misinterpreted and reported back to the supervisor. Good example. Or good code, excuse me. Example number 2. So this is a white female team lead. Knowledgeable about the job, she is very sneaky and watchful. When she comes into my cube, I notice while she is talking to me, she looks at my computer screen and any work I have out. On one occasion, she was asking me questions about my military service and my daughter. By the third question, I asked her why she was asking me these questions. Her response was, it would be something good. My response was, exactly what is that? She didn't answer and started questioning me again. I looked dead in her face, eye to eye, and calmly told her, I won't be answering your questions. I have work to do. Have a good day. She immediately turned red and walked away. Later, I found out she was tasked by the supervisor to question me for an article they wanted to add me in for our work bulletin. The team lead will also answer work-related questions I ask her with another question that has nothing to do with the subject if she does not know to try to confuse me. Code strategy: learn what I can from her, no personal conversations. None of the other co-workers like her because she is very arrogant and condescending towards them. From my observation, some of that has to do with her being promoted to the team lead position, and they were not. One strategy that I use with her, and it is very effective, is to always have projects in her inbox for review. Since she is really doing the workload of two people, because our supervisor is not on site, she is tasked with a lot of the supervisor's work. So when she asks me questions on the project she sees me working on, After the third question, I will ask her something about the projects that I have in her inbox for review and reference the start date. She may say one or two more things and note something on the project I am working on, but like clockwork, she leaves. My coworkers say she likes me, so she doesn't treat me like them. In my mind, I am just codified and have 22 years of military experience of dealing with racists. I don't allow her to start with me or upset me. I just turn the conversation, even if it means asking a question I already know the answer to, because she comes across to me as the white person who has to know it all. End of transmission from this person. Maybe we'll get some updates from them as well, but great, method of keeping the journal. That way you can just kind of have a profile of the people that you work with, and then you can just go by incident that you have with a particular person, what they said, or just how the exchange went, and then developing a code. I think that's tremendous to just have your strategy in place in terms of, okay, I already kind of know how this person functions, so I already know these are things that I talk to with this person, these are things I don't discuss. And then if you can pay close enough attention to tell, oh, okay, so if I can just do these things, I'm noticing the pattern, they'll leave every time. I thought that was great where this person had noticed. All I have to do is reference the projects that I put in her inbox, which might mean there's work that you need to be doing as opposed to just being out here asking questions and trying to snoop on the niggers in the office. Great. Once you can, because you can use that to your advantage. Just say, oh, okay, I've seen this pattern. I'm just going to continue to use that to my benefit. If I want to see if I can hurry up and get her out of my space, make sure I have some reviews on her inbox that I can cite and reference and see if we can continue this going, because you just want to solve the problem. Just get her out of here as soon as we can. Encourage that. Again, your workplace journal, it doesn't have to be as lengthy as this. You can make it concise, right to the point, united, independent. But the more information is there, the more useful material. And I think for some people, once you just get in the habit of starting to write that journal, you see the value of it. I think you will want to write more. Just a thought. Other folks chimed in. If you have commentary, questions you would like to ask, feel free. If we had anybody else who had suggestions for the caller about the situation, he was saying that he sells shoes. He looked in the inventory on the computer, and the shoe that I guess a patron wanted was not in the inventory. He went to actually look, found it, and he got in trouble for this. The person that accused him of some wrongdoing said that it was in the policy and procedure that he wasn't supposed to be in this area. He asked if that could be pointed out today. They said sure, but then they didn't do it. 2 weeks passed, and he still has not gotten clarification. So he wanted to know if he should pursue this by pursuing a formal claim with the store to get accurate information about the policy and procedure, or if he should just let it go. Nothing else has been said. He hasn't been given any disciplinary action or anything. Just let it go. If folks had any suggestions on that as well, we would appreciate, he would greatly appreciate it. We would as well. Any other folks that we have not heard from who have a hand up, commentary, suggestions, lines should be open. Feel free.
Gus?
Yes, ma'am.
Sorry, I know I've already spoken, but it was just useful you just reading back that summary. To me, that just sounds like there's something else going on in terms of whoever has asked this person not to be in that area and not logging stock on the computer. It sounds like they're up to some kind of fraud, which is probably why they are wanting this particular person to not go and search for products. That just doesn't make any sense to me. I would tread lightly. I think there's something else going on there. Maybe that person just needs to observe, because it just sounds like there's a potential there for stock going missing, and the person is trying to cover up some kind of inappropriate activity. I don't know. That's just what it sounds like to me. Maybe others have a different view. I'll mute my line.
He did include more detail, like his the official report that he submitted to his job is lengthy, but there were two different incidents where this happened, where a patron wanted shoes. He looked in the computer. The inventory said that they did not have those particular shoes, and then he went and looked, and it turned out the shoes were there. So this has happened at least twice recently. So I don't know. Maybe they got some sort of scheme going on with these products where they don't enter them in the inventory, and then they're selling them out of their trunk or whatever. I don't know. But I know Emmy, she said the same thing. She said that she thought, you know, something seemed a little sketchy about all this. I don't know if the guy, I'm paraphrasing, but she was saying, I don't know if the guy who accused him of doing something wrong by going for looking for these shoes, if he just doesn't like him, if he wants him to get fired, if he's just a racist, you know, whatever it is. But seems like he already has some sort of grudge against him, or maybe what you're saying, maybe he's got some sort of, you know, his own fraud scheme going with these shoes and doesn't want any interference. Would you, talking to Stacy, would you encourage then, you said tread lightly, so would you encourage filing the claim to get information about the policy and procedure, about what he's supposed to do or not do? Or would you just say nothing, just observe and don't make the claim?
Yeah, I mean, I don't like the way they've worded that, the sort of in-store claim. It just sounds very bizarre to me, but I guess that's the organization. I don't think there's any harm with asking for more information in terms of procedure, particularly as, you know, if this person is just saying, I want to do my job well. I think it's how you phrase it. You know, could be saying, I'm just a bit, you know, unsure about what the requirement is here, so I just want to have clarity, and kind of just word it in a way which doesn't seem confrontational or anything. But I would still observe what's going on there, because there is clearly something going on, you know, with inventory not being entered onto the computer system. And it's just a complete overreaction, which suggests that something else is being covered up to me. But I wouldn't necessarily reveal that I think something fraudulent is going on. I would just observe, because lots of people will get blamed when that eventually comes to light. So, I'd keep my own records as well of anything that didn't seem quite right to me.
Great recommendation. And just a general FYI, the merchandise that we're talking about here, these were like pricey shoes. He mentioned like the exact price. Some of these shoes were close to like $300. So the little bit that I know about business, people generally, if they're serious about business and, you know, selling pricey items like this, you generally want to be very mindful about that inventory. You don't want to have $300 pairs of shoes just disappearing from the inventory every other week. Generally, that sort of thing would be a major problem and might even cause someone to get fired at minimum for just being poor at their job and not being able to get stock entered properly. So, yeah, I think all of that, great suggestions from Stacy.
Actually, Gus, so I was just going to say, now that you've said that, I think they should log that, make that request for the whatever they call it, in-store claim, just because you will be demonstrating some kind of audit trail in the future for the fact that you're trying to get some kind of clarity on what your role should be. And because, you know, that is going to come back at some point in the future. That just does sound like something untoward is going on in the background there.
I agree. And there's lots. I mean, that's another thing that shouldn't be a surprise either. Contrary to popular opinion, it is not black people. It's generally white people are really, really good. Again, Enron, white people are spectacular at that type of fraud and what have you on the job. Number one, because nobody is looking at them. They're looking at all the Negroes like with these and what have you. Meanwhile, the Bernankes of the world and Bernie Madoffs of the world, they're getting everything. They are the biggest looters in the universe. So don't be surprised about anything like that. And exactly what Stacy just said, if you do see any evidence that looks like something like that is happening, just, you know, make sure you're taking steps to protect yourself. You don't need to, if you don't want to be a whistleblower, you don't want to go make accusations or what have you, no problem. Just make sure you're taking steps to protect yourself so that you do not get blamed when all of this hits the fan. They have you on the news or what have you, being indicted as, you know, the kingpin of this operation to defraud the organization. Other folks that are with us have commentary, your own situation, or if you had questions about what has been shared thus far, if you have a hand up, line should be open.
Can I be heard?
I heard both of you. Let's get our female caller in Ohio first.
Okay. Thank you. Real quick. Good evening to Gus, the host, to all the callers and listeners on the line. Just a couple of things. As far as the situation with the shoes, I would pursue it because it's like I need to know the policy. You know, in retail, if you have merchandise that's, like you say, he looks in the computer, it's not listed in the computer in the inventory, then you go back there in the back and the shoes are back there. It just sounds like there's something not kosher, if you will, going on. And I can remember just years ago, I worked in retail, and I mean, it was a beautiful top, lady woman's top, sequin. This is back in the day when sequins was a big thing. They had one of them. This top sold for $600. Put it out, you know, on the table, you know, in a display. And I think I came back to work like the next day or a couple of days, and that top was gone. Was not listed in inventory, you know, and it was gone. You know, and they took, you know, at least, they never knew who took that top, but the top was gone. So that gets down. So if I was him, I would just pursue it just to know the policy. And, you know, I'm a stickler looking at your handbooks or what have you. I would pursue it because it just seemed like something is just not quite right. Okay, number two, you mentioned something earlier at the top of the show about positions and then power being taken out of positions, and particularly, you know, positions that will be promoted to, and then next thing you get in that position and you find out you really don't have no power. I can remember, this is back in the mid to late 80s, I was living in D.C., and Maryland has a college, I think it's the University of Maryland, which is, I guess, like a large college system. Because I even think in this college system, there's, I guess, one college would be considered a black college. And they were looking for a new president for the whole system. And they hired this black man. And I can remember that, you know, the news went out that they hired him. And the next thing, you know, the news went out that, you know, he resigned the post. And he talked about that. He says, they're taking, you know, all the power out of the position. He says, by the time I get in the position, there would be no power there. I'm just a figurehead. And he said he wasn't going to have that. And I mean, it was, and this is, like I said, this is back in the 80s, 20, 30 years ago, where I'm at now in terms of I don't like these words, conscious, but knowing things about how white people work and how black, you know, how white people work when it comes to black people. Back then, you know, I knew that it was like, man, that just sounds crazy. And he talked about that. And, you know, and I just remember I just kind of shook my head. I'm like, wow. And I remember when he left, I was like, I don't blame him. I'm like, you're going to hire this man to do a job. You're going to take all the power out of the job so that he won't be able to do it. And then you have what? You have a black figurehead over the system. So we really do, you know, have to be careful, you know, it's that, because it is something to be promoted into these positions. And then next thing you know, like you said, you know, they want you really to go back and, you know, get the Negroes in check in line, and you don't say nothing to the white people because, you know, that's just not supposed to happen. So I just think that we have to, you know, be mindful of things like that, because also, too, that stuff that just continues. Because now it's the black person that has this, but he's angry about that. So now he's really taking it out on the black people. And the white people are making his life miserable because they know that he or she or the person in that position really can't say anything or do anything to them. So I just wanted to say, I mean, I just thought that was very interesting when you said it. I remember that. I guess that's probably been almost 30 years ago, but I remember that story. And that was his exact reason why. Because, you know, usually you get people in these big high positions, they give you some kind of vague reason as to why they can't, you know, take the position or something like that. And he just outsaid it. He said, they're taking the power. He said, they're, you know, taking all the responsibilities away from me. He said, by the time I get in the job, I won't have any responsibilities. And he said, I'm not hired to be, you know, I'm not here just to be a figurehead. So I just thought that was very interesting. So I just wanted to share that because that, you know, I mean, that is work, the ultimate of workplace racism, you know. So I'll mute my line. Thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely. Hold on one second, Mr. Steele. We have one other person we have not heard from at all. The caller at 8162. Did you have commentary? Last 4 digits, 8162. Did you have commentary or are you just listening?
Oh. Greetings, everyone. Sorry, I was on mute when I began speaking. I just wanted to chime in on the shoe situation you guys were talking about. I definitely believe he should file a claim. If no one's cooperating with him in his immediate workplace, like you guys all said, it sounds like maybe an inside job might be going on or something. He can take higher up, and he can also just kind of spin it in a way where he says, look, customers are coming in on several occasions asking for these high-priced shoes, and, you know, it doesn't in the system. Maybe something's wrong with the system. He can kind of, like, put that in or say that he goes back there and he sees that it's there, because yeah, it seems like something's not right and it's might come back to fire on him. Like he could be the scapegoat because it could just be one person. Like you said, guys, it's most of the time white people doing these frauds. And this black person should definitely file a claim, or I would recommend he take it higher up. That's all I had for now. Thanks for listening.
For sure. Just with Stacy and some of the other callers that have, you know, raised concerns that they think some sort of fraud could be happening or just something untoward, something incorrect could be happening with this store where they're selling shoes and the black person is having difficulties. If there has been an allegation that you, talking about this black male, that you have been back in the warehouse area and you're not supposed to be here, and then it comes out later that merchandise is missing or things aren't being inventoried, I could see where that could end up being a problem for you, particularly if, you know, some of the folks have alleged that the person who made this accusation that, hey, you're not supposed to be back here, he could just add on to that, be like, oh, yeah, we have had, you know, some stock issues, some things have been missing, and I did see Roger, he was back there, and I told him he wasn't supposed to be back there, and I didn't think anything about it, but now, I could totally see that sort of thing happening. So I think I said from the beginning, I would pursue it just because I am not down with any sort of accusations on the job. That is serious business. So we want to get to the truth of the matter. Now, if it just so happens that something untoward is happening that I'm not involved with, well, then that's great. Maybe that'll come out in the wash, too. But yeah, I would do the claim just to, you know, make sure we get the policy and make sure business is correct. Other folks, Mr. Steele, do you have commentary?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Two things. One, I have to say that right now I'm just doing my normal evening route after I get off of the plantation. Oftentimes, if the weather is nice, I'll take a nice drive along the Pacific Coast Highway, and it's just beautiful. And if you have an after-work ritual that that you take part in, that can be really instrumental in dealing with a lot of the issues that you might have to deal with throughout your day. Just knowing that, hey, you know, this beautiful view is available after I punch out and I'm off the plantation. It's just really comforting. So that's just a suggestion that I have. You know, have an after work ritual. And also, speaking of just your mental state on the job, have we discussed the engineer that recently committed suicide at Uber?
Oh, I just saw somebody posted it on my Facebook page today. I'm aware of what you're talking about, but no, we haven't discussed it.
Okay. There's something I really need to stress that could save your life. This issue came up recently with a victim of racism. They were being interviewed for a position at a firm that had a reputation for being a very difficult place to work.
being a very stressful place to work. And this particular victim of racism asked me about this workplace. And I knew a lot about this particular company's reputation because I follow the tech industry, and I keep really close attention to you know, hiring practices and company culture, and these are topics that are really important to me. And I already knew from prior knowledge that this place had a reputation, but if I hadn't had that prior knowledge, a resource that you can go to research workplaces is a website called Glassdoor.com. At Glassdoor.com, people who are former or current employees at various plantations log in anonymous reviews of various workplaces, and you can see aggregates of the general sentiment of the workplace reflected in different scores for different attributes. You know, you can rate the CEO, you can rate the benefits, you can rate the management. There's different attributes that you can rate. And anytime you are being offered a position at any firm, I encourage you to do your research on that website. That is one resource that you can go to find out about the general company culture, what you can expect. You can even find out key aspects of the interview process on that website. I mentioned this because, and I mentioned this after the, I mentioned the Uber situation, because Uber is an environment that I can safely say has a very negative reputation. In the last few months, a number of their top staff have resigned. There has been a number of sexual harassment claims that have become high-profile cases. And the CEO himself has been on camera treating Uber drivers very poorly and speaking to them in a very unprofessional manner. And this victim who committed suicide, I have no doubt in my mind that they were that the wife of this victim is correct in her assertion that she blames racism and the workplace culture for his committing suicide. These tech jobs with high salaries come with high demands. And if you're not in an environment that is conducive to your success, you need to get out and take your skills elsewhere, because these environments oftentimes are designed to make even the most talented developers feel like they aren't worth anything. They do this to mess with your head and to suppress the amount of money that they have to pay. And it isn't, it's only real recently that it's hit the public attention that Uber is an environment that is not a healthy environment to work in. And this situation, this suicide, should not be taken lightly. I think that we need to examine this situation very closely. We need to find out all of the information, including who were his managers. And I think that this is a prime example of how toxic these workplaces can be and why you need to pay close attention to where you are working. And not all,
Mr. Steele, your line is breaking up a little bit. Like, you sounded fine at first, but now it's a little staticky. Give us your last sentence again.
Yeah, just, you know, not all of these coins are good coins. a lot of these jobs are traps, and they are not designed to help you feel good. Even in the market that
being a little staticky. Let me hang on. Let me check to see if it's me or if it's your line or if we're having some other issue. Can any of the other people that are with us on the line, can we just get a sentence so I can verify if this is a total problem or if it's just Mr. Steele is in a maybe bad area?
Oh, this is me. Am I breaking up?
Okay. Seems like you're. I just hear a little. It's like a swirling or something in the background.
It might be the ocean breeze. My apologies.
Oh, it's clearer now. It's clearer now. Okay, you're good now.
Okay.
Can I be heard?
Okay, good.
Yes, we can hear you, retired firefighter. I don't hear it anymore now. We're crystal, should be.
All right.
Oh, and there it is. Stacy, are you with us?
Oh. Hi, Gus.
Oh, okay. She is with. I don't hear it again now. I'll let folks know if I hear it again. It's gone now.
I heard it as well, to be honest with you. I could hear it.
Right on. Yeah. I don't know what that was or where it was coming from, but it has resided now. Okay. Was that it, Mr. Steele? Because I did think that was a really important report. Suicide. The black male, his name was Joseph Thomas, who committed suicide, and he was only 34. The ugliness of all this, and he had a beautiful family. He had two beautiful young boys, and his wife is pretty gorgeous as well, black female. I mean, just horrible all the way around. And the portion, this is in the San Francisco Chronicle, if you all want to check it out. This is on my Facebook page. Someone posted it earlier. But at Umer, Mr. Thomas struggled in a way he never imagined, in a way he never experienced in over a decade in technology. He worked long hours. He told his father and his wife that he felt immense pressure and stress at work and was scared he'd lose his job. They urged him to see a psychiatrist. He told the doctor he was having panic attacks, trouble concentrating, and near constant anxiety. All suggested that he leave his job, but he was adamant that he could not. He was always the smartest guy in the room, said his father, Joe Thomas. But while working at Uber, he went down the tubes. He became someone with very little confidence in himself. The guy just fell apart. It's hard to explain, but he wasn't himself at all, said Zacoli Thomas. This is his wife. He'd say things like, "My boss doesn't like me." His personality changed totally. He was horribly concerned about his work to the point it was almost unbelievable. He was saying he couldn't do anything right. I'll stop there. You can read the rest of it at the San Francisco Chronicle. And they do mention racism specifically in saying that, speculating that Mr. Thomas might have also been a victim of racism because they don't have very many black people in this industry anyway. And they have done quite a bit of reporting over the last few years. Even Jesse Jackson has been prominently talking about this, them not having very many black people and the treatment that those black people get, the few who do have jobs in this industry. So absolutely, black mental health, really important report that just came out this week. Folks have... Other folks have commentary on this specifically? What happened with Mr. Thomas, black mental health, workplace racism?
Yeah, I worked in a few, but actually I worked in the tech sector my entire career now that I think about it. And yeah, there's a culture of tearing down very competent workers in review meetings, hackathons, in all of these different events, I've observed a pattern where managers seem to be incentivized to tear down even the most skilled workers, to make them feel like, and this is something that I've been made to feel like I'm the worst performer on the team. I recently called out one of my managers and said, "I don't think it's true, this claim that you're making, that I'm the only person that's having this problem." And then, he eventually broke down and said, "Well, it doesn't matter if it's true or not." So this is a cultural thing that is within the tech sector, and it's a pattern that I've observed and it's really disgusting. And don't pay a lot of the criticism that you receive on these jobs too much mind, because oftentimes they're straight up lying to you.
I don't know what it is. It seems like it could be something with your line, because I haven't been hearing it when other people are speaking. But I definitely think that that is important, that non-white people should take that to heed. I know you're talking about the tech industry, but I think this is something that a lot of black people are subjected to well beyond the tech industry, in terms of just being constantly criticized and told that you're doing something wrong, or that you're just, nobody else in the department is having these issues but you. You're the only one who keeps screwing up. Those type of attacks, it's designed to erode your black self-respect. A lot of racists, they absolutely love to have a black person on the job that they know, I can always go in and yell at this person and call this person names and talk down to this person. They love having a few Negroes that they can just kick around. That's why I said with the shoe thing, that's why I said I'm not about letting those accusations go, because they just enjoy that. That is the mentality of racist man, racist woman. I know it might be difficult for some of us to even fathom, because I think, at least for myself, I could not fathom just going in and making up accusations on a regular basis, to just go in and find someone and say, yes, we're just going to blame such and such on them. And I mean, that's just crazy to me. But that is daily routine for racist man, racist woman, racist child. So absolutely, if this type of thing is happening to you, take it seriously, because this is tons of black. Matter of fact, Dr. Welsing, I remember when she said, when she emphasized why it's so important that we talk about workplace racism, she said, and this is someone, again, who had nearly a half century as a professional psychiatrist, general and child psychiatrist, she said, I'm certain that a significant chunk of black people who are unemployed, it's not that they can't get a job, it's not that they don't have skills, it's that they have been subjected to terrorism and psychological trauma, and they don't want to go back in that environment, whatever that means. If that means I have to do drugs, or if I have to be on the streets, or whatever, I just don't have a, whatever that means, I am not going back to suffer all of the abuse and trauma that I experienced before. She said that consistently. She would even talk about some of the patients that she saw who had been traumatized and stressed under the system of white supremacy. So take it seriously. The workplace, it is designed to corrode our black mental health. Other folks, any other commentary they wanted to get in on this situation or other topics?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. As far as the mental health on the job, I understand what you were saying about, you know, a lot of black people have chosen to just leave the job altogether and, you know, just kind of rough it out because they don't want to deal with white people anymore. And you know, being in a confined space, a lot of times, if you're working with white people on one of their jobs, you have to be in a building or some type of confined space, and you have to interact with them for however many hours you're there. And, like, you know, I'm fortunate enough to have finally been able to work on my own, but it's really not efficient. But I absolutely will not work for another white person. I will not do it. I won't go back to another one of any type of their jobs. And that's something that, like, me and my siblings are strong on that. My father's strong on that. You know, we will not work for white people because, I mean, I'd rather starve. I'd rather, you know, eat very, very, very little than work with white people. And, you know, so I did everything I could so that I could have my own business, or what's called your own business, you know, or, you know, I have to interact with them less, and I that's so comfortable. And so now when I speak with them, I usually do it with email. That's real cool. Because, you know, if they say anything, if they act up, if they're already acting up, but if they do something that, like, is flagrant against me, there's documentation, and, you know, of all of our dialogue,
for most of our dialogue. I don't do a whole lot of phone conversations unless it's very specifically something I need to speak to you on the phone about. And I went ahead and downloaded that recorder that I heard on the couch. It was a suggestion that you can download this app that records your phone calls. I went ahead and did that so that, you know, I can have the documentation even of that, because I know white people are slick or they're tricky. And what they'll do is they'll switch to a phone call when they want to do something that if it was documented, you know, they could have some type of repercussions. And then going on that, you know, white people have the repercussions for what they're doing to us. Is that person? I agree that person, whoever, there was a white person who with the shoe stuff. There was a white person. I think the white person was accusing them of perhaps going against the policy. I would document that. Whether I would check it, the policy, if it's true or not. If it's not true, absolutely document it and make white people spend time doing something else other than terrorizing us, because they're serving us support, they're terrorizing us. Make them spend time doing something else. And like I said, I won't work for white people. You know, if I don't, that's why I don't have children yet. You know, I want a wife, but I don't know how to do it in the system yet. And so I won't work for white people, but if I had children, I might have to. But I just don't know what to even do for the next part of my life, because I'm at the age where I need to have children. But yeah, okay, thank you.
Context of white supremacy. I am hearing, now that's wacky too, that the little distortion that I was mentioning before in the program, I can hear it again, and then it stopped. Now I don't hear it. That's pretty wild as well for it to be that intermittent within the broadcast. But yeah, the trauma on the job, I think we had talked about that before. We'd even, some of the listeners, people that dialed in, we had talked about getting a list of either occupations, jobs where you don't have to go in to help mitigate some of that, where you're not having to be around white people directly, things where you can work from home, something where you could just work on your computer. You don't even have to be at home. You could just do whatever time, whatever you need to do on your computer and be done to minimize. I think that would be very, very helpful because it's just, I've seen a lot of instances like Mr. Thomas, where we had the black female who called in before, where she was saying she was being terrorized and they were making gun noises behind her and what have you. And she said that it was really impacting her mental health. It's tons of black people. This is that's how you end up with the situations. What happened with Omar Thornton, the black male in Connecticut, where he said he said specifically he was experiencing racism on the job, that he was working with racists and they were mistreating him. This is in Connecticut, 2010. Then he went and committed counter violence. They had a similar situation in Florida recently, where a black male employee, he was terminated from his job. He went back and resorted to counter violence. This happens to a lot of black people as a result of being stressed on the job. And as the our most recent callers, he just touched on, because it's tied to so much. That job is, you know, how a lot of people, that's how they make sure they have a place to stay. That's how they make sure they're able to take care of their children if they have offspring. That's how they make sure they can, you know, have food to provide for their family and what have you. It just, when that job situation is not going correctly, it can throw so, and then I suspect that's why Mr. Thomas, the black male who is alleged to have committed suicide in California after being stressed working at Uber. Same thing. They said all these, he went to a psychiatrist and his family, they were telling him, you just quit. You don't need this job. Just leave it. And he felt like he couldn't. He had two children. He had a wife. He had a house. He's living in California. They got mad. If he was a homeowner, oh man, real estate is not cheap in California, especially not in the Bay Area. So they can get you in those. That's what I was saying before. Even if your job situation is going well, we're still in a system of white supremacy. They do not intend for you to have a 40-year run of phenomenal workplace success. That's just not what's intended for any of us. So if it's going great, wonderful. Try to save up as much as you can. Enjoy it while you got it. Save up as much as you can and make sure that way you can be better prepared for when racists, when they decide, oh yeah, we're going to get back to that nigger. We left them alone long enough. Now let's go back to work on them. That way you can be prepared. You can be in a little bit better position.
Anything else folks wanted to get to? We have less than 30 left in the program, unless folks are all satisfied. Any other comments, suggestions, anything you want to touch on last few minutes of the program?
Yeah, can I be heard?
Hang on one second, Mr. Steele. Did any of the other folks have commentary? I'll check back, get your commentary also. Any other folks that are with us have commentary?
Hi, Gus.
Yes, ma'am. Stacey in the UK.
I am just on the, yeah, I mean, well, definitely the mental health thing. I mean, I just think it's so important. And, you know, I do appreciate that tech sector is probably more challenging in many ways than others, but maybe even the finance sector. And it is a cross sector. I deal with it on a regular basis, and I completely identify with those constant attacks undermining your confidence in yourself, and it takes a lot to work through it. But I agree that, you know, actually just don't listen to the feedback, because, and that's not about self-denial, it's just blatant racism. But the main point I wanted to make was in terms of I think, you know, talking about the app and recording phone calls, I just think there's a general point following on from last week's discussion that I do think you have to have more than one mechanism for keeping an audit trail of the things that go on in the workplace. I don't think it's one method. I think it's, if it's your emails, your own notes, whatever you do, I just think we should have a variety of methods, because, it just doesn't hurt to, you know, if you've got your emails, you've got your journal, whatever you decide to do, just have more than one method, because I think the more robust your audit trail, should you choose to formalize or not, as the case may be, or if people are doing things that are illegal, then definitely you will need more than one record of how you've dealt with that situation. So that would just be my recommendation. I mute my line.
Great strategy. Any other folks have commentary before we check back with Mr. Steele? Any other folks have suggestions or comment they want to share?
I would just say that from what I've just recently been listening to add on to it, I would say probably medically, a lot of medical problems also would come from a lot of non-white people in those type of situations, where it's a confined type of environment and that person is in a particular type of financial maybe a personal situation where they feel they can't just drop the job and go somewhere else. There's no such thing as transferring anywhere. And being that I said confined, there's not that much room to even move away from the problem or problems on the job itself. And I have seen where some of us internalize it to whereas it actually makes you sick. There was a caller who reported that, a couple of weeks ago, something like that. That actually makes you sick, or the extreme in the other way, where there would be some level of counter violence that takes place that is permanent in a sense. It actually should be almost, I would say, a planned objective when you getting on the entry level of jobs to prepare for all of these problems that we talk about all the time. So you would have things, you know, kind of balance out, you know, you have some kind of outlets, you know, that it won't damage you. Damage you less if possible, internally, so you won't go to those extremes. I think that's very important. That's it.
Absolutely. That's going to be their intent, but really be mindful of that. And
that's something I think we've even talked about that before on the program. And some people, if you're in an environment, especially if this is not a place that you intended on being for your career, like this is not the job that said, oh, yeah, this is, you know, where I want to be until I'm ready to retire. Like, hey, there should be some decisions about. And I certainly, we talk about on this program, not going from job to job, and you're going to encounter racism everywhere, but certainly some plantations are more traumatizing than others. If you're in a spot where it's really just crushing your spirit, crushing your black self-respect, this is not something that's salvageable. This is not some place where you wanted to remain for the rest of your career. Make sure that you get that resume updated and are looking for other options, because a lot of times racists, they get you in that spot where you just feel totally trapped, that I can't leave, I've got to stay here, it's nothing I can do. And you can find a way. I think we can all can use our brain computer to find a way to get a better occupation, a better way to, you know, use our time and energy in terms of employment. Mr. Steele, do you have anything else you were going to add?
Yeah. In the course of that preparation for any sort of eventualities that occur on the job, one thing that I think needs to be, one area that needs to be explored is the law. And you may want to familiarize yourself with the employment lawyers in your jurisdiction, simply because a lot of the situations that are described could fall into that area of activity. And should you feel like you're, you know, wrongfully terminated, and if you have your evidence all collected, all of your records show clear discrimination that you've gotten in the form of emails, in the form of your notes, in the form of recordings, what have you, have all those materials ready to present to one of these employment attorneys. They know the laws in your area. They can hear your case and make a determination if it's worth taking or not. You can also use these materials to report to the EEOC to get a case started. That can be also taken to a private attorney to act upon within the law of wherever you are working. I know that a lot of us work in these so-called at-will employment jurisdictions and states that have passed these laws that are heavily in favor of employers. However, employees still retain some level of rights that can be asserted in a court of law. And I suggest, if you are in a situation where, hey, things are going great, but you are keeping up your journal, you can even take a situation and just, you know, throw a for instance at some of these places, because most of these attorneys do have free consulting. They will not charge you to listen to your situation initially. So, I totally want to put that out there, and I think that employment attorneys should be sought out to maybe participate in some of these discussions.
Very interesting, Mr. Steele. I would be interested in hearing if they had suggestions. I know we've played some sound clips where there were attorneys, they seemed to specialize in labor disputes, those sort of things, where they had suggestions, and they did recommend, encourage, look at the local laws. I know that's something that can vary depending on which state you're in. Look at your, or where you are in the world. Look at the local laws so that you can be more knowledgeable about what your rights are as a employee. And certainly, like the same thing when I say with policy and procedure, that can be very helpful. I do know also Mr. Fuller, he did have a bit of caution with the attorneys with workplace racism in terms of going to get your case. He said it's just been his experience that a lot of times it just ends up being lots and lots and lots and lots of money and very little result, if any. He said it generally it will end up being you go to see the attorney and it will be, oh, yes, we might be able to do something. Going to need about $15,000. to get this started. And then you go back and more money, and it just goes on and on and on. I think we've also said before, some of these things, if you're looking at a court case, these type of things could take years. And that's exactly what you can expect racists to do for a lot of those situations. So they're just going to say, hey, we can wait them out. We got a lot. We probably got a lot more money than you do. So we can get a lot more attorneys and we can carry this thing out, you know, for years, which is what happens in a lot of those instances. So that is a bit of caution that Mr. Fuller had. But certainly it will probably be in your best interest to be more knowledgeable about what the local laws are around employment. And a lot of places, they have resource centers where you can go. And they have like either workshops, brochure, they'll have a website where you can just get all this material online. A lot of times they'll have that. You can make it really, really quick where you can see info, things that would just be really helpful that you need to know. A lot of the stuff that we talk about here all the time in terms of if you get fired or if you're dealing with sexual harassment, retaliation on the job, a lot of times they'll have resources that'll speak directly to some of those issues. So be alert of that as well. Did we miss anybody? Anybody else who had a hand up who had something to share, or folks good for the broadcast? Anyone that we missed had a hand up, had commentary that they wanted to make sure they got in? Anyone that we missed, suggestion, comment they wanted to make sure they got in? I will assume folks are satisfied. Did we miss someone? Didn't think so. I will assume folks are satisfied. I hope everyone is doing well, since it did seem like we had a good grip of spectators this week. I hope folks are not having issues. If you had a pleasant week on the plantation, spectacular, outstanding. That means you should be prepared. You should be rejuvenating, repairing yourself, and preparing. Because if they let you alone this week, they're probably going to come back twice as hard next week to make up for lost time. So that's the mentality. I apologize to anybody if, you know, that makes them feel bad. If that's not the way that you want to go into your weekend, thinking that that's what you got to look forward to bright and early Monday morning. But this is the system of racism, white supremacy, and it's just not designed for black people to be having a fantastic experience on the job. So that stated, appreciate everyone sharing your commentary. You can drop an email. We'll read your thoughts next week. If you shared, if you emailed, or if you called in or what have you, and you had something to discuss, give us the update. I always appreciate hearing how things evolve. That way we can get better with our counter-racist code. We get to hear how racists respond when you go in and you have thought and you're going to use some counter-racist logic to neutralize them. We get to hear how they respond. What do they say? Does that solve the problem, or do they, you know, come with something else to try to get you off track? Always appreciate the updates. That really helps us evolve and grow our counter-racist code. We'll be here tomorrow. This is study session number 5, the autobiography of Mrs. Coretta Scott King, wife of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. We are picking up right after the I Have a Dream speech in the book. We've read about the first quarter or so. That'll be tomorrow, normal time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Fantastic book. Have really enjoyed the read so far. Saturday, the compensatory call-in, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. We'll catch up the news notes from the past 7 days. And Sunday, Sabrina Johnson will be with us. This is her second time being on the broadcast. She was with us last spring, roughly about this time last year, maybe a little bit earlier. But she was here last year. She was a longtime student of the late Dr. Frances Cress Welsing. She's continuing the Cress Welsing Institute in Washington, D.C. They met earlier this month. They'll meet again in May and June. It'll be the second Thursday of the month in May and June. Same schedule that Dr. Welsing held, where folks get together, exchange views, and revisit some of Dr. Welsing's concepts, theories, and other bits of information that she shared at the Institute over the years. But Sabrina Johnson, she'll be with us on Sunday. We'll review the recent memorial for Dr. Welsing, as well as some of her thoughts on Dr. Welsing's prediction that Trump would be in office and what that has looked like over the first, 100 days that he's been in office now. But she'll be here Sunday, normal time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. If you have a guest suggestion, if you have a problem finding something in the archives, If you have a question, if you have a gripe, feel free to drop an email. UntilJustice@gmail.com. UntilJustice@gmail.com. Huge thanks to all the folks for participating. I hope it was a constructive investment of your Thursday evening. And again, workplace racism, supremely important. We'll be looking forward to doing it again on next Thursday. With that, I will state again, sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. I've seen no evidence that non-white people being intoxicated, cigarettes, cannabis, alcohol, any other narcotics that they crank out, I've seen no evidence that us being intoxicated on these substances, that this is going to help us knock white supremacy out of here like in the next 5 days. None whatsoever. In fact, pretty much all the evidence I've seen, us being inebriated, it makes it much easier for racists to continue to rape, terrorize, and plunder black people worldwide. So, in fact, it would be a great counter-racist economic strategy to say, hey, I'm not going to invest a nickel in any of your narcotics and poisons. None of that. We're going to at least bankrupt you in that area. And then maybe we can use our brain computer to maximum efficiency to put racist man, racist woman, racist child out of business permanently. That said, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Context of White Supremacy signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, your brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.